All right, I'd like to call to order the April 11th, 2022 special meeting of the Marysville Board of Education. Can I have a roll call, please?
Mr. Ferguson is absent but listening in. Mr. Keck?
Here.
Ms. Savage?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Ms. Devine?
Here. Tonight we are going to begin with a presentation by Todd.
Okay. So the main thing with the presentations, and I think my email kind of spelled out a little bit, let me get this started first. I don't use Google very much. So in essence, in the past I said we're going to come to a point where we need to make a vote, and this is kind of the no turning back point, and that's what this vote is here tonight. So, not to say that, you know, this is the final project, or it's like everything, you know, we're not writing anything in blood here, but at the same time, we need to basically make a decision that, yes, we're moving forward conceptually with this project, and we either we're on board with it or we're not. So that's kind of where we're at right now. So this presentation is just to kind of rehash some stuff, just kind of give some perspectives on some things, and talk about, you know, what other options there are. So, first off, since we're talking about a building, that's a good time to kind of revisit the discussion of our three buckets of money. We've got our operating fund, or in other words, the general fund, which currently is 23.9 mils. Our bond fund, which collects at 6.6 mils. And our permanent improvement fund, which collects at 4.3 mils. So the operating fund, as you all know, you know, when I do my five-year forecast, that's what we're talking about. That covers the operating expenses of the district, the salaries, benefits, purchasing supplies, and utilities. Right now, we get around $26 million of local tax revenue annually into the general fund based on the millage. We get roughly $21 million of state foundation funding. Based on the current projections, we're projecting a levy in May of 2023 for operating dollars. And as I've mentioned before, due to our state funding in total going down in the future years, it is very likely that we'll be back on the ballot again in 4 to 5 years. The bond fund, the 6.6 mils, generates just under $8 million of revenue annually. All of the money in the bond fund is used to pay off debt that was used to build the school buildings that we currently have. That money can't be used for anything else. We can't decide, well, we got extra, so we'll use it to, you know, build another building or whatever. That's not how that works. So that money is kind of spoken for. Again, we've talked in the past, all of the bonds that we have right now, that 6.6 mils will expire in 2029, which means that 6.6 mils would go away, that people would see that their tax bill would go down if that goes away at that point. But again, we've talked about the strategy of being able to hold off until that time to build an entire new building so that we could use a no new millage bond issue to do that, which in essence would mean we would be able to tell our taxpayers we're going to build this building and possibly even be able to staff it without asking for an increase in taxes. We just need you to maintain what you're already paying. So that's been a strategy we've talked about. And then the permanent improvement fund is 4.3 mils, which generates roughly $6 million of revenue annually. Permanent improvement fund can't be used for operating expenses. It's typically things with a life expectancy of 5 years. And, you know, we're talking about technology, materials, curriculum materials adoptions, roofing, asphalt, school buses, those kinds of things. And one of the reasons that we like the project that we're recommending is we're able to cover the cost of that project entirely out of the permanent improvement fund with money that is there existing. So the point being, we're able to do this project without asking any increase in taxes. So that's a big benefit. Kind of a recap of how we came up with the idea to do this project. So, you know, originally we were, and I think just just the buzz in the community was just about the explosive growth. And, you know, that's kind of the buzzword you would hear. So we did an enrollment study because we were afraid we were going to have to build a whole new building sooner than we had expected. But with that enrollment study, they found that enrollment was growing, but a little more gradual than what we had anticipated, which meant that it does appear, based on that enrollment study, we will be able to wait until 2029 to build a new building, whether that be an elementary or an intermediate or a middle school. So that we're able to hopefully push that down out to that time. But what we also know is that we have an immediate need for space at Edgewood Elementary. Through this whole project, we've had meetings with the principal, who has talked to the staff there, and there's immediate spacing concerns even this year. There's things being done on the, I think it was occupational therapy is taking place on the stage. There's just really not enough space to allow for any additional growth. Any more growth that comes into that building, you're probably going to be kicking out a service from the classroom to then now have kids in that classroom. So now you're going to have to find a space to do a service or maybe even cut a service. So you're looking at buildings now not operating, I would say, maybe equitably, where, you know, things look one way at Mill Valley, whereas in Edgewood, because there's not enough space, we can't do it maybe as well or as efficiently. So with this project, we don't have final plans yet, but we're kind of getting down that road. What the drawings that we currently have would show 4 to 5 new classrooms in this building. We say 4 to 5 because the immediate idea is that there would be 4 definite classrooms and a 5th space that is kind of a collaborative area that, if it became needed, could be turned into a 5th classroom. So it leaves a little bit of flexibility and room for growth. Classrooms in this building would be pretty similar in size to the existing classrooms in Edgewood, so it should work quite well. The plan as of now would be that the entire fourth grade class would come out of Edgewood and be placed over here. Now we talked about the flexibility. There's also a couple other classrooms where there would be space in between where they would be able to maybe pull out kids for intervention and those kinds of things. So looking at East, what we're going to do over there, in my opinion, one of the most important aspects of the project is creating a permanent home for Tri-Academy so that there's no question what's going to happen with them if we were to do something with that building. So with this project, we will know for certain where Tri-Academy will be into the future. We'll be creating a central office that has room to grow if needed. So if the district, continues to grow bigger and bigger, and we have to potentially expand our special ed department or whatever the case would be, there's room there to make that happen. There's also room there, whereas, here right now, this space is typically used, and even in some cases, still not large enough, so that there would be space there that you could have more professional development, more staff meetings and things like that, where just have a nice centralized place for that. With the growth in the district, we would be able to set up a nice welcome center for new families. We would also create permanent board meeting space, which would make things easier for our technology team as we've been streaming meetings, and we wouldn't have to have them totally come to a new space each month and set up the equipment to do that.
Did he get in the building? No. Is Jermaine going to be able to get in the building?
Probably not. It's probably locked.
Yeah, the front
door is
locked. Is he here?
I don't know. Okay.
No, I couldn't get in.
Okay.
And then also, there's other space in there that isn't determined just yet. So there could be some additional usable space, potentially community space. I know we've gotten a question about the gym. I mean, right now, a benefit of taking over that building is we would now have Tri-Academy actually to have access to the gym so that they could use that during the day. So that would be a benefit to the kids at Tri-Academy. So the cost benefit of doing this project, the estimated cost is $4.5 to $5 million. So, as I mentioned, the benefit of doing it the way we proposed is that the entire cost would be covered by the PI fund, so no increase in taxes. Another benefit in my mind is that this is a long-term fix. It's not a temporary fix. So the good thing, in my opinion, is if enrollment study is wrong and things totally change, well, did we just waste our money? Well, no. We still have a central office that will last for well beyond our years. You know, we've got a central office built for 30, 40 years, whatever the case would be. If things change, will this space have been wasted? No. You know, this will still be usable for into the future for whatever. And the other benefit is right now, beyond Raymond, Edgewood is kind of the outlier when it comes to space. Edgewood is smaller than the other buildings. So in doing this project, we will create Edgewood space that now is in line with Mill Valley and Navin and Northwood. So it's going to be make it similar space, which then when it comes time for redistricting, that makes everything simpler, everything flows a little smoother. And again, the other benefit we talked about is because of the levies, we know we've got the levy coming up, and then potentially shortly thereafter, 4 or 5 years later, another levy. That makes it a hard time to consider passing a bond issue and an operating levy to fill that new building. So the idea of building a new building right now is a little daunting in terms of the millage ask to our voters.
And construction cost.
Yeah. So a fair question is, so what if we don't do this? You know, what if we say, you know, we don't want to do this, what do we do? So, I mean, because you know, I'm not going to tell you this is the only thing and we've got to do it. So there's other ways to look at it, but we do feel like this is the best option. But other options would be, if we don't take care of this project, how do we fix the immediate space issue at Edgewood? And the easiest way to do that would be through redistricting. But that comes with several problems. It's been shown that disruption of a student in the middle of their elementary years is bad for the educational process. So we try to, I don't want to say promise, but we tell families that we don't want to redistrict any more than once every 5 years so that their student won't be disrupted while, you know, having to leave Edgewood their second grade year and then go over to Navin or whatever. So that is always our goal with redistricting. If Edgewood doesn't get this addition here, it's still going to have that, it'll still be smaller than the other building, so a fix of redistricting now is likely just a band-aid that will probably have to be done again so that we would constantly be disrupting students in the future. Also, we create transportation inefficiencies as our boundaries would have to continually change through redistricting. And again, as I mentioned, Edgewood would still be a smaller building compared to the others. One option would be, instead of doing this smaller project to fix Edgewood, we could just build a brand new school. If money were no object, I think that would be a great option. But as we mentioned, the building of a new school impacts not just the bond fund, but also the operating funds. The bond piece of it is pretty easy. If we're talking about an elementary school, we could probably do that for less than a mil. Probably 3/4 of a mil is all it takes to build an elementary school. But the operating funds is the problem. We would probably be talking about maybe 3.5 mils to fill the building with staff and operate the building. So that is the bigger problem when we're already asking for a certain amount next year and then another amount several years later. Plus, the current enrollment study doesn't show a need for a new building yet. And again, as I've mentioned, this enrollment study isn't infallible. There's a chance it's wrong. So there's a chance that we build this new building and it's sitting empty. And we've seen that in the past. So we wouldn't want that to happen either. And another option we talked about is modulars. I mean, that would fix the space here. That would fix the immediate need at Edgewood if we found someplace out there to put modulars. The reason we didn't like that option is, one, we were still, it's still a seven-figure fix because of all the infrastructure that has to go with it. And two, that's temporary. So in my opinion, I feel like that's a lot of money for something that would be temporary and would have really no long-term benefit. So timeline that's changed, and I'm sure it will change again, but here's where we are right now. On the agenda tonight, we have the Rusilli contract, and as I mentioned, basically what we're looking for here is a yes or no vote, but a yes vote is a vote to say, yes, we want to move forward conceptually with this project. We kind of have to, Rusilli's not going to go any further if we don't approve this contract and say yes, go ahead, because otherwise they're kind of risking working for free if they don't know that we're definitely doing the project. Even though we're approving the contract, that doesn't we're not approving the final design and we're not approving the final budget. That process is still underway. So the design process has started and probably be done relatively soon. That's the benefit of the CMR process, because the architect and construction manager are already at the table together. Once that design project is done, then they'll work on the budget. So you will be kept up to date with, you know, what the design looks like. That can be changed if we see things we don't like. You'll be kept up to date on what the budget looks like. And if we came back to you and said, well, sorry, it's going to take $9 million, at that point, we could say, no, we don't want to do that. So we're not signing on to something that we have no control over. But obviously, through this process of being able to work with the architect and CMR together, we'll be able to do some cost containment and make sure that we stay within budget.
Todd, in essence, when you've looked at the permanent improvement budget and you've looked at dollars to pay for this, you have created an unofficial budget saying that we can afford up to about this amount of money. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And so in the design process, let's say what Todd says happened, hopefully it's not that far off, then we start cutting things in the design to get back to where Todd has affirmed that we can afford. So, you know, for example, in this space, there's potential garage door between this classroom and the next classroom. We would take that out. There's moving of a mechanical room so that you could create an intervention space in between. Maybe that would have to come out. So we would get the design wrapped up, kind of get where we are, and then say, okay, can we afford all of these things knowing this is where we are? And like Todd said, the bonus is Rusilli is sitting at a table, so they already know. You know, we're at $5 million, right? And so they're knowing going in that that's where they have to, and it's not creating any anxiety, I would say, in our meeting. And some of the things that we've switched, quite honestly, are going to save us money. The only question is really around lead time, which is kind of a sense of urgency. It's taking a long time to get some things in. And then our price is going to hike back up, or continue to hike. So that's really the benefit of getting moving in that direction and getting some things ordered and secured in that way.
Yeah. So if we approve the Rusilli contract tonight, the next thing that would be approved would be the architect contract. That has been ready and could have been approved tonight, but with the quick turnaround, I didn't want to load you down with two big contracts. So that would be at the April regular meeting. We'll have the architect contract ready for you. As I mentioned, the design phase is in process right now. So then once that's all completed, we'll have the guaranteed maximum price. Now that that has been pushed back to September is the goal for that. The goal would be for East to be ready for central office to occupy in February of 23, and then July of 23, which was before students would be ready, but that, you know, July of 23 is when this building would be ready for students, so we could get in here and, you know, teachers could get in early and that kind of thing if they wanted to.
You had a question, Bill?
Yeah, Todd, so we approved this tonight, and we've got this, the Rusilli contract, so this building is going to be ready to go. And then we get the architect's contract on the on East, and we decide, nah, we're not, I'll time out.
So it's the Rusilli contract is the contract for the whole project.
Okay.
So it's not just for one building, and the architect project will be the same. It'll just be a contract for the whole project.
But we really don't have, we really don't know what that's going to be at this point in time.
In terms of?
Total
cost.
Right, yeah.
And what the details are going to look like. We don't know what the details of the design are going to be at this point, right?
Correct. And so I guess the idea of the whole point of going it through the CMR process is that, you know, we're saying the budget is $4.5 to $5 million. Rusilli knows that we've said the budget is $4.5 to $5 million. So while I can't sit here and say 100% that's exactly what it's going to be, that's what everybody is working towards. So when we have design meetings and somebody says, well, I want diamond encrusted this, and they say, well, that's probably not going to fit into our budget. So that's what everybody is pointing towards.
I know, but if I'm, I don't care, you pick anywhere on there, you know, and I'm looking at that and you're saying, well, we've got $5 million, you know, if I could get it done to $4.5 million and pocket half, and we're talking about every contractor down the line doing that. Sure, you came in at $5 million and you feel good about it, and they feel real good about it. Does that make sense? I mean, when I go buy a car, I don't walk in there. Sometimes the salesman asks me, exactly what do you want to spend on a car? You know, none of your business.
Right.
Because that's exactly what I'm going to walk out of there with is with a piece of junk. You know, at my maximum price.
Well, that's what we've hired Rusilli for. It's Rusilli's job to, because they're going to be doing a lot with subcontractors. So, you know, they'll be the ones, you know, kind of whether you call it an RFP or a bid, whatever they'll do to get the best price, because they know they need to keep it within budget.
But they also benefit from this.
Yeah,
that's why I'm saying it makes it very hard to. Get the best price when you have a budget with a cap on it and you say, you know.
That's the trade-off between the CMR process versus right. The bid process.
Right.
The problem with the bid process, it might not have worked well with this project because it's two projects. So we would have bid one, which may have even made it hard to get that one done in time. Then probably, you know, 7 months later, we would bid the other one, which then prices may have changed or whatnot, and then it just really would have made it difficult to coordinate the two projects and be done in time.
And one of my concerns was if we put it out to bid, we get acceptable bids for one part of the project, but not any acceptable bids for the other, and then we're kind of set, you know, in the middle. Trying to get, you know, the lowest, best price you can for the construction is always important and a goal. But trying to do that from my seat tends to create some other problems with the other ways that we could approach this. And I realize Rusilli and the architect may end up making some money on this deal. Now, we also got some information, and I don't know how valid it still is, from OHM where they outlined roughly what the prices were going to be. And one of the items that they had in there was, down at the bottom, was overhead and profit. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so...
They're very transparent about that.
Yeah. And so, and it was based on a percentage. Mm-hmm. And I would think that depending on how the construction costs all go out, that figure, you know...
But that figure was just for this building, correct?
Well, they had... There were two sheets.
You should have sent
one for each.
Maybe I didn't see the second sheet.
Yeah, there's one for each.
Okay.
All right. Because the anticipated cost for...
Yeah. 2,113,360.
So what was the cost
for this building? Was roughly 2,100,000.
Yeah.
And for East was 2,300,000.
So we've said four and a half to five the whole time.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think those are the same as we shared in December.
Yeah. And so their profit, what they're going to make, is set as a percentage of the overall construction cost. And I know that when I contracted to build my house, I paid the building contractor that built the house a percentage of the cost of building the house. Mm-hmm. And I think, not being a builder, but that's what I've heard most of the time, is rather standard procedure. So one of the other advantages is that if you go to bid, it's the lowest best bid. This process allows Roussillon to pick subcontractors that they know are reliable and will be able to get the work done, do it the right way, and have everything ready on the timeline that they're presenting. So I see the timeline as being a very valuable piece of this project, getting the facilities ready to be able to do everything. And having that timeline may cost some money, because we may not be able to get the lowest best bid. But I think the approach that we have put in place at this point, to me, makes a lot of sense, because it allows us, the builder and the architect, to all have input on the project, to all be able to come with a resolution. And I think the end product that we will get will be something that we can be proud of.
I just wanted to ask Ryan real quickly. So, I mean, you've worked with both of these companies before? OHM.
As a district.
As a district. Okay, yeah.
Same team on the east, or on the east of the house. So.
Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And same delivery.
Roussillon and same designer.
Okay.
And
like same people that...
Yeah, Peggy, okay. For Roussillon, who came in after Craig.
Yeah, okay.
Is the lead, and Gary from OHM is the lead designer.
Okay. And you feel really comfortable with them, or, you know, good experiences for the most part?
And our lead architect on this is local to Marysville, which I think is a plus.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have a pretty favorable relationship with Roussillon as well. I think you heard that he was not going to charge his pre-construction costs.
Right.
He's also not taking the contingency, which they'd be entitled to.
Okay.
If that didn't get used, so that.
Okay.
That's a nice gesture by them as well.
Yeah.
For probably a positive relationship in the past, obviously. And Bill, I don't know if this was part of your question or not, but we are obligated, even in a design bid, Bill, we're obligated to establish a budget number that they have to work towards. It's always funny, you set that budget number and they always...
They manage to get there?
Penny they can get there, but You know, sometimes they go over and there's limits on that. I don't know if that was part of what you were asking or not, but this is the same. We have to establish
it. That's a good point, because I don't remember what project it was. I can't remember off the top of my head which one it was, but we recently had a project that we did the bid process as opposed to CMR, mm-hmm. and the bids, I think it was a parking lot, the bids came in higher than our budget, so we had to deny it.
Right.
So, I mean, I guess either way, they're going to know our budget to some extent. Mm-hmm. I guess the benefit here is that we have more control over the budget, because if we don't like what we're seeing, we can, you know, make changes as we go.
It's a little bit unique that we're a public entity, mm-hmm. as a school district where everything is public record, mm-hmm. as opposed to a private business who could keep their financial numbers a little closer to the vest. Mm-hmm. As a public entity, and I saw this when High Point was going through their build and renovation stuff, they ran into a lot of issues because the builders knew exactly how much money was going to be generated by the levy that was just passed. Mm-hmm. And amazingly, everybody came in like about 6% over what that number was. Mm-hmm. So they had to go through the process a couple times. And it's a nature of working for a public entity. Everyone knows what the budget is before you start. Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, working for a public entity, you're supposed to be protecting those public funds. You got to be really careful of the perception of this, whether, you know, I understand the budget side of it, but when it's public knowledge, that makes it very difficult to save any money.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think that's when you need to be focusing on the quality, and I think that's when the relationship, and just like some of the things that Brian was just saying about how they're not taking the contingency and some of those things are valuable.
It's not just quality, but, you know, it's in Rusilli's best interest to put things in the contract that you don't necessarily need. No. Okay, and I give you an example back to the old high school, you know, they wanted to put an oxyacetylene system in at that time that cost, I think, somewhere in around $10,000. We didn't ask for that, you know, and it eventually got denied, but they went ahead and put all the paraphernalia in, so if we ever wanted to expand it, we could, okay? Well, so there was $5,000 wasted, you know. I eventually turned it into a workbench, you know, in the shop. It was just an ugly overhang on the side of the steel overhang on the side of the building. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying to you is it's in Rusilli's best interest to say, you need this gold fitting over here that you'll never know that occurred, you know, unless you're really astute on that, because it jacks their 10 to 20% up on the other end. And that's what gets them up to 5 mils. I don't know, you know, you got two guys who are the experts on this. I don't know whether there's any way to hide that figure or not a little bit, or to start out lower, you know, and maybe you are low enough right now considering inflation. It may all blow up.
The number's 4%, just in case you didn't see it, but there is 4%. So, and I think what we're finding is we've already, in these meetings, tried to pare it back, if anything. So, and the incentive, actually, one thing I kind of like about this model is there's an incentive for both OHM and Rusilli to sort of maximize the efficiency on it, because they can't just do change order after change order after change order. Just because of delivery model, they go over that. They got it. I mean, they're on the hook for it. Mm-hmm. So, I think we have a little bit of a built-in buffer there. That to speak to some of the stuff maybe that you were talking about, I don't think they have quite the liberty to try to sneak that stuff past the goalie. And I would come back to again. I think a nice thing about having an architect on board who is invested in the community. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, because they really become integral to keeping these things locked down as much as they can. Mm-hmm. So I do feel comfortable with Chad and his team to really, to obviously they have a job to do, but I do think, you know, having him on board, and I think you would probably speak to this too, but I think they've got our best interests in mind. So.
And also, Jeff Orban's at the table, which makes me feel good when you're talking about HVAC or whatever that I know nothing about.
He mentioned things last meeting to clear some things up that we were talking about. So.
Just good.
I was just asking. He mentioned earlier that Rosselli said they were not going to take the contingency fee. Mm-hmm. Now, on this building, back some time ago, the architect was saying the contingency was just under $200,000.
Just to be clear, that's if it doesn't get consumed.
Correct.
And that should be in the contract.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But if they said, we're not interested in that, now obviously the contingency, if rafters get more expensive or lights get more expensive, that will come out of the contingency fee, and that's the buffer against the prices that they got when we're quoted, the ones when they actually buy it, and so forth. But to me, that sends a signal that they're not trying to scrape every nickel and dime out of this project that they can. So,
I've spoken. I mean, I know Chad. He's a great guy. Mm-hmm. And very just level-headed. And so, I can speak to that. My main concern is when we were here in this room in January. We were told that we would have a guaranteed maximum price before we approved, gave the final approval. And now we have a contract without the maximum guaranteed price. And so I voted yes to the we've already approved the resolution for the conception, agreeing to the conception to move this project forward. We've already appropriated monies to budget this project. So we have two yes votes from this board about this project. I think with the estimates and with the previous, the months that have occurred since January, where can Rosselli come back at our next meeting with the guaranteed maximum price so we can move forward as was presented to us, the board?
I mean, we wouldn't want to rush them into a GMP, because it's to our benefit to have the design process vetted thoroughly so that we get a GMP that is as accurate as possible.
And to that point, I agree with you, but the original timeline said by May, we would have a guaranteed maximum price, and this is when the board will vote to proceed the final vote. And so when you come, I have problems with this, because that's not what we talked to. That's not what was discussed with the board. My vote probably would have been different. If I knew that, because my concern was how much is it going to cost, what is the final product, what is the design. I still have concerns with the timing of this project, with the inflation, with the levy coming up next year. I think we should focus on our operational levy, but that's not the conversation here. We've already agreed conceptually to this project. It's now signing the contract. And if the board's told that we are going to have a guaranteed maximum price before we sign the contract and give it official, then I want to hold your word to that.
Well, that's my credit for that. That was my mistake, because I didn't realize that this would be due before the guaranteed maximum price. So that's on me. But again, I don't know if you heard this part because you were in between driving. So, I mean, I would agree that the idea of the things you've voted on in the past have kind of conceptually said, yes, we're moving forward, and this, in essence, is just another one of those votes, because it's still not the, you know, this project is in stone. But the reason this one, in my opinion, is maybe a little more serious, I guess, I can't think what word I would use, is because if we don't approve this contract, Rosselli is not going to continue to work. So that's why this one has the immediacy that it does.
Well, they're employing draftsmen and so forth to do that.
Right. But and I don't know how they would come up with a guaranteed price if they don't until they know what it is that they're going to build.
Right.
So, I mean, they applied for this project knowing that the board was, I mean, I have a figure. The email that was sent for the January presentation showed a flow chart of this project, and it showed that the contract would be signed after the guaranteed maximum price is presented. And that's what we were provided. I can pull it up if I need to. We initiate this process, and I'm assuming that this was, if we were communicated that, and we have a diagram of a flow chart saying this is the process, they know this is the process, correct? That they agreed, they applied, they agreed knowing that this is what the board expected. Am I right? This is not what we were told. So they knew that the original process was, we're going to select
you. I don't think that they have changed anything. I think it's only a matter of what I said was, you need, you know, the guaranteed maximum price, that will be the end all be all.
And that was supposed to be given in May.
Yeah, so that's been backed up. But the idea of this contract for Rusilli needing approved, I never told you that. And I didn't realize that. So that's my mistake.
Well, okay. And did most of the information we have come from the architect?
Yeah. Well, in that I'm working with our attorney.
Okay. All right. But Rusilli was not involved in setting up like the original timeline and so forth. They were not part of that.
Right. Well, correct. I mean, we approved Rusilli on February 17th. The selection of the construction manager at risk,
which is actually earlier than we slated,
right? Because there was only the one. Right? So, yeah. So at our organizational meeting, we okayed the soliciting for the construction manager at risk. Then on January 20th, we approved OHM, mm-hmm. and then the committee concept to work on the contract with them. And then in February, we approved Rusilli as the construction manager at risk. And then, it appears like between that February and now is when all of this contract work has been going on. But they work on the contract, and our legal counsel reviewed the contract. Okay. And again, I mean, I know, like, maybe Todd doesn't do these projects all the time, but, no. You know... Sometimes,
there's no guarantee that, you know, I that's why I put a question mark beside the guaranteed maximum price of September.
Yeah.
I'm not telling you, I guarantee you there'll be a guaranteed, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, that's the goal right now. Timelines change with construction projects. So
I guess the bottom line is, though, we know that the guaranteed maximum price is going to be, it has to be what our budgeted amount is. It has to be in that range.
Right.
So
why don't you just come and say, here's a cut?
Well, I mean, because they're you know,
well, there's
they have to do some bidding
and the
design.
Cost of the materials and the cost of the labor involved in doing that. So.
And the design isn't finished.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes, you've been raising your hand so patiently.
So, you know, I've had two, I'll be honest, phone calls from what I would say influential people who claim they represent a group of concerned parents and they're both from this neighborhood. That's all further I'm going to go on their names, but you know, one of the big concerns has been turning a perfectly good office building into a, you know, and I think we've answered that, but the other concern is, you know, what's the security and how often are these kids going to be transferred back and forth? And I look at that too. I mean, are these kids going to have to suit up twice a day to change building? And that's instructional time lost both over there and here and in between. And who's going to provide the security for those individuals as they go across there? Do I personally have a problem with kids walking in the snow? No. I think it's good for them. But I think there's a group of people that are very concerned about that. And as I drove in tonight at 4 o'clock, I was like, holy cow. You know, do we have some kind of major lockdown today that I didn't know about, that everybody has to show up and get Johnny out of school or what?
I just pick up drop off.
Yeah, that's Edgewood. It's that's Edgewood crazy. From three early crazy. From like 2 o'clock.
Sometimes they line up at two.
They do.
So that's one of the things that I hope in May that I'll be able to tell you how many kids are going to be in each classroom, where the parking lot's going to shut off on a safety platform, what there's a safety gate there. Talking about installing, and I want to have the final, you know, logistic on where that is. We did talk about from the get-go having a covered
walkway or something.
Walkway
sidewalk.
Bidding that outside of the project because we believe we can get that price better outside of the project, and show you where the door will connect out of this building to head into their building. So my goal is to in May to be able to communicate that and for Chris to be able to share that with families as well. It will be for fourth grade students. There was a discussion between is it going to be kindergarten or fourth grade, and there were a lot of attractive ideas about doing kindergarten, mm-hmm. but the big thing that kept us from doing kindergarten is transitioning back and forth. You know, you're talking about sometimes off and on boots, putting off and on coats. It's fourth graders are a little more independent, obviously, learners, and it made a lot of sense to stick with fourth grade. And really what Chris did is work with his teachers, and then they submitted plans for why they should have the space, and it was kind of a cool design thinking kind of thing. And so we landed on fourth grade. But those particulars, like I don't want to tell you the gate's going to be right here and it's moved back. That what I can tell you is there'll be a safety, like gate partition type thing put in place, a new like walkway type thing over. We'll bid out a covered piece to that outside of the project. And then we will have kind of those transition periods. One of the things that is being talked about is, do we just keep art supplies here and have the art teacher come to the kids? Mm-hmm. Not as easy for a PE class, right? But mm-hmm. it might be easier for art to do something like that. So they're working on those things now.
Mm-hmm. So in line with that, the one thing I didn't see proposal talked about was just adding on to Edgewood instead of putting modulars in, and the cost of maybe doing that and keeping this as a board office.
We discussed that. I didn't look back to see. The issue was partly, Ryan, you might remind me, that it was going to be quite expensive. I think it would have been more than the cost of this, because part of the issue is with the inflation and also the supply chain, what we're doing inside of this building is different than what it would take to build an entire facility, because in terms of roofing and all the different things. So the issue with that was the different types of materials we would need would be different and more expensive. So it wasn't as efficient as just kind of retrofitting.
Like gutting the inside.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The site work. That building has a few additions to it, so I think there was a sense of, aside from the cost itself, like how many times you're going to add on this building, and obviously where does it go back here that would be appropriate, but I think ultimately just the cost was more.
We did look back because Jeff Wargo was the one that, you know, kind of threw that out.
And then the other, not a financial piece of that is if we went that route, we're still some of the things that we're accomplishing with East, we don't accomplish. Some of those things we don't have to have, but some of those things we do, when we still need to figure out what we would do with Tri-Academy if we didn't, you know, whether it would be keep that building or rent, you know, whatever the case would be, it would just leave that kind of unknown kind of hanging.
My concern is if we don't call this right, you can write off your millage budget in 23, you know, your tax levy.
Meaning the levy will fail?
Yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
And it'll fail again in 24 and 25 for that same reason.
Right.
And so, you know, how big a cut are you willing to take down the road? And, you know, you might argue with me, but there's still people in this community that aren't voting for a tax levy because we built this building.
Right.
And we ran trailers.
Right. Right.
You know, and you can't just ignore that fact.
Right.
I mean,
right.
These two are coming.
No.
Right.
Hand
and
fist.
Yeah. And I understand, and I understand the questions, and it would be nice if we had everything in a nice neat bundle, but I understand that, or I see for me anyway, that if you ask somebody to invest the time and get the draftsmen's, the architects, and all of these people to come up with a guaranteed maximum price, those people have to be paid. And what I see tonight is Rosselli making sure that they're going to get a paycheck because they've done everything they've done up here with no guarantees and no payments. I know that in any construction, when we did the athletic fields, the original timelines, we could have wadded up and had a spitball fight with. Because
Things happen,
things,
don't they?
Things continued to happen. And we had things that were dropped on transformers. And one thing after another in terms of going through all that stuff.
Yeah.
So I understand, and it's always a bit unsettling to not have everything sitting in front of you, but I also know that there are some realities to being able to get to where we want. I keep looking at the kids, and when we've got services that are being provided to the kids on the stage that should be being delivered someplace else, can you do it? Yes. Is it... for those kids that are on the stage receiving whatever services they are in their other school buildings, those kids would be in a different setting. And it bothers me and has the whole time that I've worked for this school district that from time to time we try to do just enough instead of just trying to do it right. And I've looked at this and I've considered the comments and everything, and not everything is working out exactly the way that I would like to see it work out, but I feel like it's the right thing to do for the people that we're supposed to be doing the right thing for, and that's the kids. And if we have critics, then we have as a board, and I have as a board member, the responsibility to try to educate them so that they understand that while, you know, it doesn't look right, you know, there was a good rationale for what we did, and that the tax dollars that we are putting into these, and Todd pointed out, those tax dollars are permanent. This building, when it's remodeled, will always be available as classroom or for some other use. The east building will be available for administrative buildings, for Tri-Academy, and for whatever else purposes this district needs in the future. So it's not money that's being thrown away. It's not money that is going into something temporary. I taught for a lot of years in a trailer, and it's not the best. It becomes awkward. And from my experience, there was an impact. I also had a class in the upper level of the gymnasium in what's now the east,
Early
college high school, and was teaching American history, economics, while phys ed classes were being taught on the gym floor. Former teacher Paul McCartney had his classes on the stage in the little theater. And he had a choice of either the stage lights, which turned that space with the, because they had study hall on the other side of the curtain, it turned that space into a sauna because of all the stage lights that were in there, or they sat in this real dim, you know, rather serene environment trying to have class. And my experience tells me that we need to do things that are right for the kids, give them a nice classroom, make sure our classes aren't overly crowded, that we have space to put kids, we have space to provide the services that we need. And I know that all of our buildings have extra space, but it's not just the numbers of kids in a classroom. You also have to think about the specialized classes and so forth, and the interventions that need to take place. And you can have a, you have to have a space for four or five kids, or for 10 kids, to be able to do those things. And I'm concerned that at Edgewood, we're not going to do a job for those kids that are most in need, the ones that need the specialized services. I think we can get enough classrooms, we can get all the kids in someplace, but then we don't have the additional space that we need to be able to deliver the extra services that many of our kids need. And for those reasons, I believe that that this is the right direction to go.
Yeah. I agree that we need to make sure we have space for our children, our students at Edgewood. I do agree with that. What comes before space is staff, educators. We have a levy less than a year from now, or almost 12 months, that's going to be on the ballot. If that levy fails, the space is worthless because we are not going to have the staff to actually be in those spaces to educate children. Inflation since our January meeting has gone up 7.9%. Supply chains have not improved. The price of gas has not lowered. We're going to have property valuations go up. The time for this project is after we've confirmed and approved our levy. That way we have the staff that we need to accommodate the growth. We have that secured first. Then we build building capacity. I think we're not doing this in the right order. And that's my honest comment for, okay, for this subject.
Well, I had that discussion with...
I just want to apologize. I have to leave.
Okay. Any other questions for Ryan before he leaves? No. Okay.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you, Ryan.
Feel free to, you know,
okay. Thank you. Thanks.
Yeah. And I was at the time, I was president of the Teachers Association, and we were in a similar thing. Teachers were looking to get more money. There was a renewal that was coming up, and I told the administration, our superintendent, and our board treasurer at that time, I said, do what's right by the teachers. And then everybody will work together, we'll educate the public, and we'll get the levy passed. That's what happened. And I understand, it's not going to be easy getting a levy. But I also feel whether we do this project or we don't do this project is not going to be an issue. I don't think that it's going to be a significant issue because the money is coming out of permanent improvements that cannot be used for salaries and benefits. And I understand people, and that's another piece of the education, that we have different buckets of money, but we can't transfer the money from permanent improvement over to operating. And the issue that we will put up will be for operations, not for permanent improvements and not for bonds. So,
I lied.
So we never have transferred monies between buckets.
No, we have.
Okay. So once you start moving monies in buckets, and I have this same issue with my own home farm, mm-hmm. bucket here, you know, and
Once you do that, you got one bucket.
It's not easy. It's not easy, but I'm just thinking.
There was a lot of money from general to PI,
but you can't move money from PI to general.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just in law.
Legislatively.
Okay. My one comment with about the permanent improvement fund is that next year, right now we have roughly just north of $6 million, correct? Next year we'll have 12.
No.
Because some will be spent.
Well, yeah, but we have a PI schedule of annual expenditures.
Am I close to 12?
No.
No.
What's the number going to be?
Probably around 6.
So we're going to spend 6 on top of this project? We're going to spend 6?
No, we're going to have probably more like 7. So in essence, we don't have an operating surplus of $5 million every year. I mean, it doesn't go 5, 10, 15, 20. You know, we have expenditures each year of probably around, I have to look to see, somewhere between 4 and 5 million. So okay. We just happen to have a surplus now of okay. 5 million that if we just do nothing, that probably, you know, carries through to some extent. It'll fluctuate up and down.
But we would still have the money in the account, and we would have the operational levy passed, and maybe the supply chain and the actual value of your dollar. I mean, we're the highest in 40 years.
That's
no, but
a lot of
who
speculation.
Knows? I know.
I
yeah,
mean, that's a lot of speculation.
We do not. This is the highest inflation in 40 years. 40 years, the highest. Right. Yes, could it go up? Yes, but we're going to still spend the money no matter what. But this is the operational.
But we're
levy.
Spending the money on renovation, which is a lot. We're getting a lot more bang for our buck than right. we are on a new build. On a right. new build, I would maybe agree with you, but on a renovation, I don't. Most things you need for a renovation are Home Depot-type materials. Mm-hmm. You're not going out there and trying to buy big bricks and concrete. And
if that was true, then we would have a guaranteed maximum price because
no,
it would be
they don't have the design. No, they don't have the design yet.
The guaranteed maximum price will be based on the design, which will show like the scope of the whole project, because that will then determine everything that needs to be ordered. I mean, it really gets down to the details.
We have estimates, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
we don't have a design.
We have a rough draft drawing
at the beginning, mm-hmm. but the architect and the construction manager at risk haven't had enough time to really sit down and go through everything
sort of
to come up with that final design.
We gave you the only estimates we've received.
It's based off of now
on the architect. The architect without the construction manager.
Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Sorry,
I'm going to be wrong
on some things here.
That's why there's five of us. Yes.
But I want to exercise caution and have operational levy passed, because the space is not going to mean anything. We still going to have overcrowded classrooms because we are going to have to cut staff. That's already been said, and there's already the people who've heard that. That if the levy doesn't pass, we're going to cut staff. I've heard. I mean, teachers have told me that.
Mm-hmm.
That's been out there. So why are we doing a building project when we have to make sure the lifeline, our bloodline of our district, which is our educators, is secure. We can fund them first, then do this plan. I mean, we can't.
The flaw that I see is that we can't take money from PI
right.
and pay teachers.
I'm not saying the PI money is not available for the staff. I'm not saying
you can
that.
Go the other way.
You can go the other way.
And so that's a big problem.
Well,
and if you take money out of operation and put it in PI, and then later you need it back in operation.
But we're not going
to. But we don't do that.
Not yet.
Right, right.
Well, I mean, we haven't.
That hasn't been our practice.
I'm not.
Okay, so let me, you guys, so we've been talking about this for a long time,
yeah.
Okay? And I think it's pretty clear that we have some differences of opinion, okay? Which is okay. If there aren't any more, like, direct questions at this point, I think we need to move forward and vote on the contract.
Okay?
Because I don't know that we're getting any further.
I have one more question.
Sure, okay.
Would it be possible to get the Rusilli or the architect or both to come up with a final design for X number of dollars and not have approved the project for $2 million or whatever, And that way we could come back and vote.
Well, again, we're
and
not...
And they wouldn't be out any time.
No, we're not approving a project yet.
Okay.
So and you're not approving, you know, it's not like, well, if we approve this tonight, mm-hmm. we have now obligated ourselves to $2 million.
That's not what we're doing.
We're kind of in now. We're in now. You know what I mean? Like the GMP is launched out of Rusilli now engaging in the work. Now, if they come back, again, it's my job. Don't forget. To say, nope, that's not, that $6 million isn't going to cut it. We told you. Mm-hmm. 4.2 or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, and that's in that packet you got. Mm-hmm. They would have right. to come back to you for an amended GMP something or other mm-hmm. To inflate that price over what we said we could spend. Like mm-hmm. that all has to keep coming back to you. But we've got to get them at the table to get the pricing going. They've been at the table to see mm-hmm. the design and talk us through and help, you know, understand space, but they can't get going on their part and doing their pricing and really start digging in without a contract. Does that make sense?
It does. Thank you. I understand that.
Okay. So, after that lively discussion, mm-hmm. If we move on to the next item, I would accept a motion to approve the construction contracts that are attached to our agenda this evening.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Smith.
Second.
Second by Ms. Savage. Any more comments before we have a roll call?
I just have one comment.
Sure.
I just want to make sure that mm-hmm. moving forward through the next phases, mm-hmm. that I want to make sure that parents, especially parents of incoming fourth graders, and the teaching staff is involved mm-hmm. in the design of mm-hmm. what they're going to be curating.
Right, right.
They're going to be curating that space.
And it would be not next year's fourth graders. It would be the year after. So it'd be current second graders, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. And my comments are just, I thank everybody for their comments. And I understand, I do understand your concerns, you mm-hmm. know, and it's kind of frustrating to... when you have projects and you have to throw your budget out there and all that kind of stuff. But I also am really glad that we're working with the people that we're working with and that we have some history with them. I think that's really important, and we've done some big projects with them. So I have that comfort level, and I do, I mean, I'm very familiar with Edgewood, and they need more space. And so, I mean, even now, I wish it was going to be ready next year, but hopefully the year after. So anyways, any other comments? Roll call, please.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Ferguson?
No.
Mr. Keck?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. All right. Now we'll just adjust our agenda here by about an hour, okay? Wishful thinking, right? So the next item on here, just kind of going through things, I thought we would do a quick review of the orientation with our two new board members, and just you know, if there's anything that you feel like you have not been afforded at this point, anything we could do better.
Good.
You're good? Okay. And I know, I mean, we're going to be doing building yeah. visits, so you'll be able to meet administrators coming yeah. up in the next couple weeks here, or next week.
The only thing, I guess, maybe the first meeting was pretty rough for me, but...
Uh-huh. You planned it that way.
Yeah. Maybe let's not have these problems.
Okay, right. That's right. Okay, yeah. Nothing more controversial, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, but I mean, from the, yeah. the binder, everything, and getting us involved in those trainings,
right.
I found I need to still learn more about school finance, and so, but I think yeah. I can't learn all overnight. And
no, you can't.
Full time
you won't
and,
even be able to learn yeah. it in a year, unless you are.
But
a
everyone's
genius.
Been very supportive right. in answering questions and calls. So thank yeah. you.
Okay. Good. and thank you, ma'am, for kind of coordinating all that stuff. Did you have any comments about the orientation process, or?
No, it's going to take a while.
And yes.
You guys have kind of jumped in with both feet, which I appreciate very much.
Yeah.
But it's going to take a while because a lot of things come around once a year, and mm-hmm. so it's going to take two or three times before you're. Mm-hmm.
Maybe five or six or seven. Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
You would
okay.
be comfortable with them.
Yeah, I remember when all of us were relatively new.
That might have even been better because none of us knew what we didn't know.
We had kind of a lively discussion here, but I truly appreciate the questions.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, and I think it's important after this past election season, mm-hmm. that we are having these open discussions in a public meeting, mm-hmm. so that people understand that we are
seriously considering different points of view. And
one of the biggest criticisms that I had of our board, this would be 8 years ago, was we didn't have this kind of discussion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons that I'm immensely glad that both of you are on the board is that you bring new perspectives, you ask very good questions, you ask questions that I think are on the minds of other people, mm-hmm. and that should all be part of the discussion and part of the decision making process.
Okay. Next, we've got a copy of, I had sent out my notes about that valuing evaluations, and one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it was just, kind of again, we have a couple new board members, and we've been using the same evaluation process for quite a while now, which is following the Ohio Superintendent Evaluation System. And I think it's good, but a couple of things that I wanted to point out on the first page where it's talking about benefits of transparent evaluations. Those, they talked about considering public discussion during a regular meeting about your annual goals and measurements or data to support achievement of those goals. And I think I think maybe just being a little bit more intentional sometimes, we talk about our strategic plan and the four areas that are in the strategic plan, but maybe taking a little bit more time just to highlight some of our goals was a thought that I had. And then the other one that really jumped out to me was their suggested evaluation calendar, because we've done the mid-year and then we do the end of year, and both of them we do, we're all in here for the mid-year and go through things and have our comments and stuff, and then we don't do anything until the end of the year. And they had some suggestions that instead of having like that more formal mid-year, why don't you in groups of maybe two for two or three months, just have coffee or lunch with the superintendent or treasurer and say, hey, how are things going with your goals? What kind of problems or challenges are you running into? Are you still on track? Are there things that we can do to help? Things like that. And maybe a little less formal, because I know like coming up with that formal recap of the mid-year evaluation is sometimes challenging to do. But if you do that, I think it helps develop the relationships with board members and you, both of you. And then at the end of the year when we have it, just kind of a one-pager recap saying, hey, we met in executive session and had conversations about the goals and felt like the goals were met or had this area of concern, whatever. I think it just makes it a little bit less formal throughout the year, but still has that end of year. And then also talks about in the summer, the importance of setting our goals and performance objectives and discussing them, and maybe discussing them in the August meeting, reminding our community throughout the year. So I think maybe right now with newer board members too, taking a little bit of time to set some of those goals a little more as a team. I mean, like you guys share them with us, but then having some conversations and saying, well, what about this or that? Because I think later on we're going to be talking about maybe some areas of discussion that we'd like to see going forward. So.
Well, it sounds like it's perfect timing for the new strategic plan. I mean,
exactly. I know.
But I mean, we're going to have some synergy around that. And it should,
hopefully
it's done in May.
And, yeah.
then it would be a good time to launch that, and it'll come to you guys for approval, obviously,
right,
and then launch it for next school year. So it seems to be a logical
right
time.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's a good change because I was telling Sue, I was like, you know, my biggest weakness is my relational bank. I don't have a lot built. Mm-hmm. So, there, you know, that gives way room for a lot of speculation or mistrust or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And in the formal mid-year evaluation, I mean, coming in, I was like, what's my role? Like,
yeah, right. Just listen,
what's
right?
What's my point? Yeah, like, yeah. I don't, that's not
yeah
really...
relevant, I guess.
Even
yeah
appropriate for mm-hmm my personal, like, how am I really do that? But having those one-on-one conversations and... the mandate is annually once,
right,
one annually. So doing a mid-year, I was also wondering, how is that necessary? I mean, I think it's good, but I don't think it's necessarily needed for our board to do a mid-year evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more, let's do those check-ins with individual board members more so.
Yep.
That would probably, you'll probably get more bang for your dollars. Or your
okay.
Not that,
right,
not that we...
I think it makes sense when that was brand new because
yes
my first superintendency,
yeah,
you guys just switched to that the system,
yeah,
you know, and those types of things. But I think it is different now. And this
yes
year presents some different challenges for us with the levy and,
right,
and with some things that we're going to be dealing with growth and et cetera. So I think that makes a lot of sense.
Right.
I have a question, though.
Sure.
And Diane and Todd, how do you... So, like, from an evaluation standpoint, how do you solicit feedback from our educators or community members that we have to work with? Like, how do we, I know maybe from the board, that's maybe not our role, right? But I'm just curious, how what's that feedback loop like for you guys? And because some of our goals and strategic plans, they're with our staff, right?
Mm-hmm.
With our educators, and they're also outward facing. So how do we judge and measure how we...
So you're kind of like getting to that, like the survey idea, kind of like, but
I
not,
that
I know,
a good idea.
Right,
yeah,
right.
But like,
I
mean, so like,
that,
what's the
yeah, but that
yeah,
that
how do
concept,
we,
you know, mm-hmm like how do basically like how do we know what the community and staff feels or
yeah,
or
I don't
like, and how or how do you feel, like?
I'm more concerned about
yes,
you
and
how
they
do you
feel
solicit
about,
that information,
yeah,
and because we some of our strategic goals are outward facing with our staff, like we need
mm-hmm
our staff to know and know what the goals are and. From a board perspective, we can, we have a lot of, we're going to have a lot of working relationships, but how do we get that feedback to the top, I guess? Like,
so how do I ask people for feedback,
yeah, yeah,
basically? So certainly we've done our surveys on a regular basis, asking about the satisfaction with the board, with the superintendent, the treasurer.
Mm-hmm.
I think we just did one last summer, didn't we? Or the summer before.
Then
also we survey staff on different things as the year goes, as well as what we're doing with the staff. So one of the things we're actually going to do with principals in the spring is really say, okay, where are we? We've been kind of confused,
mm-hmm,
so it's time to get back to our business of doing what we do really well.
Mm-hmm.
So let's look at this and put ourselves on our timeline and our rubric and
mm-hmm
make our goals for next year is related to that. So work with your staff, start talking about, we were really doing a good job with MTSS, but we've struggled this year to stay true to that, or maybe it's our students with behavior issues, we're not working that plan the way we need to. So we're going to do that systemically to launch. So which is also kind of aligned to the feedback we're getting in the strategic plan. Hey, we like what you're doing,
mm-hmm,
but we want you to boost out-of-school opportunities. Like, every kid should be doing an internship, and elementary
mm-hmm
kids need to be doing more workforce learning, and, you know,
mm-hmm,
so it's going to align to all of those pieces,
yeah,
in my mind.
And my number one question
mm-hmm
would be, does our janitor, does our, you know, custodian or the food service worker know what our strategic plan is? I mean, that's when we know, like, that vision
mm-hmm
and is being driven to the very lowest level, and that's my
yeah
number one question is because
when people say it back to me, right, when our communication
yeah
plan, there really wasn't one at first, maybe
mm-hmm
we redefined it, that would be what I would say, When people started saying it back to me, that's, I was like, cha-ching.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. we're headed that way. So that's, those are.
That's the number one indicator I'm looking for is.
Yeah. I mean, like that innovate, collaborate, inspire kind of thing.
Yeah, or even when we start talking finance, like other people are starting to talk about our buckets of money, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we started that a couple of years ago because that's the only way.
Like
my brain doesn't look like his. It probably doesn't look like it either right now, but it doesn't work like his. And to me, I'm like, there's buckets, right? And you can only dip in this bucket here. Like, you can't pay for our bonds out of what, you know, operating. And so those things now staff are saying, well, I know it's a different bucket, Diane, you know, or whatever. And community members are saying it. So,
perfect.
But it's taken a long time. And with our new things, I think we're going to launch, it'll be a new kind of reiteration of that. I'm really excited because it's coming together in a really cool way, but
good.
Also,
okay.
Yeah.
One thing I appreciate is I get a sense from both of you that when you get feedback, you relay that to us, whether it's both good or bad.
Oh, sure. You know.
Maybe you don't.
Sometimes you know before me, but
maybe you don't necessarily use the same words.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I think to me that's a sign of trust that we recognize, I recognize as a board member, that not everything is going to go right and not everybody's going to be happy. And that the goal is to work to try to achieve.
Get 51% of them happy.
Yeah.
That's right.
Educate or... you know, or do things that rectify the issues, and at least, you know, acknowledge to people that we understand this isn't exactly the way you would do it, but this is the way we've chosen to do it, or this is the way the law says, or circumstances say we have to go forward. So,
okay. So for evaluations, we'll make a few changes there.
Mm-hmm. The thing I would guess I would wonder about is that in any other company, if I were evaluating anyone, I would have the contract in one hand and the evaluation in the other hand.
That's teacher's perspective. That's not how it works in the corporate world.
Well... I kind of got one foot in the corporate world, and I would disagree with you a little bit.
Okay.
And I'd also say that in between there, those two things would be your own personal goals or our goals as a group. Mm-hmm. But maybe even underneath those goals is, you know, how does the staff feel about where we're going with those goals? And, you know, if you're able to achieve your personal or professional goals, but you've killed everybody underneath you, then it's a mute point, you know. Mm-hmm. If they're fleeing the ship, it's a mute point because of that. And I noticed that last survey that you sent out to us, you know, a huge percentage of people felt overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And you can say... well, that's this year post-COVID, you know, but I can say as a teacher, it was that way forever, you know, and as I walked back through the building the other day, everybody said, how good I looked, and I said, well, yeah, I have no stress, you know, they said, well, you look 10 years younger, I said, yep, no stress, you know, and I think, all these things we need to look at, are we reducing the stress or are we increasing the stress? Are we causing these teachers more work at the cost of, you know, because I see Maryville becoming a training ground for good teachers. We train them and they go elsewhere. We train them and they go elsewhere. And, you know, we lost an administrator. We trained her and she went elsewhere. You know, how is that, you know, that's in the middle between, you know, here's the contract, you know. As a teacher,
you know, I had a contract and I had extended service days, and the principal sat me down and said, you know, how many of those days did you work? What did you do? Where's the, you know, where's your log at on those? At the very end of my career, they're like, well, I guess you're doing it, so, you know, but it had they had that attitude at the beginning, that would give me carte blanche to do a whole bunch of things that would not be good, you know, and not fulfill the contract. And I think that's, I don't care what level of society you are, President of the United States, you know, we need to be looking at that. And I don't think it needs transparency to be public. I think that's a bad idea. I think that needs to stay the way it is currently. And you're frowning, I don't know.
Well, no, I'm just trying to see, like when you said, look at the contract, are you talking about like work days or...
Well, work days, everything. I don't. Yeah. I've never seen the superintendent's contract or the treasurer's contract.
I think it was. It's public record.
Well, no, I know, but
I think it was given out.
That ought to be part of the discussion. It ought to be a cut and dry. Yep, check. You know, then we can move to those other two piles of. You know,
well, I think
when you look at those goals, you can always say, "Well, we didn't achieve the goals because of COVID." Okay, well, you get your bonus check anyway, or whatever. You know.
Okay. They don't get bonus. They don't get bonus.
There's no bonus back there. Yeah. But I'm just saying that you can always say, "Well, we didn't get there because of," and get the pat on the back or whatever, mm-hmm. you know. But you need the checks and balances there, because if there isn't, there's going to be someone comes in and accuses you of something that's not true, mm-hmm. and you have no backup. You know, hey, tech, you didn't work your extended service days. Mm-hmm. Well, I can't prove that I did, and I can't prove that I didn't, because we never evaluated that. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense or not? Mm-hmm. So I think for your own protection, that needs to be there. But also, and I think you need to know how the staff feels, and I don't think this last survey is fair to you, because it's not directly at you. It's just like, I feel overwhelmed.
General,
okay,
yeah,
well,
right.
You feel overwhelmed because you're inadequate. Maybe that was my case, you know. I don't know. You know, and do I feel overwhelmed because my administrator's given me projects that don't really add up, you know. And I don't know if we're still being recorded or not. If we are,
yeah,
I'll give you an example.
Yes.
So, you know, but it just, there are times when, as a teacher, I felt like we were given chores to do that were just like homework that wasn't being graded, that added to our work level, but didn't add to the student's performance, you know. I don't know if that makes any sense or not, I was like, lesson plans. We had to do lesson plans for I don't know how many years, and I started putting jokes, you know, at the end of the lesson plan to see if anybody was reading it, mm-hmm. you know, and some of them were directly at people that should have, you know, nobody was reading the lesson plan. They just checking, that turned his in for the week, you know, and finally they dropped that, you know, but then there was more paperwork to come along, you know.
Getting back to the evaluation of our superintendent and treasurer, you know, I think if you look at the contract, they have some job description in there, and we generally cover that. The majority of other things would be, vacation would really be the only other thing that I can think of.
That's in the contract.
Pardon me?
That's in the contract?
Yeah, like how many vacation days they have and how many they can buy back, stuff like that.
Because the contract really doesn't get into the educational performance.
Not at all.
Right.
Like my license.
Any of those
licensure.
Before the evaluation, I did read the contracts because I had a similar understanding. Okay. Is like, well, should the contract be your job description? Evaluating them based on what did you sign up for? But it's really about the goals, right? And so we have to really make sure we have good goals to evaluate, and then good measures. So how do we evaluate?
Exactly. Yes.
So I do agree that we need to figure out what's a strong way to make sure we know what the pulse of the staff, mm-hmm. our educators, and even parents. I mean, I think mm-hmm. How do you evaluate that? I can't tell you.
Yeah.
But I think we do need to know, and our community partners, like our key community partners, that way we know how, like, we have that awareness. Because I know I have blind spots. Mm-hmm. And so how do I expose those blind spots to help me improve? Mm-hmm. And if I was in that position, I would want my board to figure out how best the evaluation is to help me improve.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. And I think we've got, I know Diane uses a variety of different committees where she sits down and she talks to people. Todd has a finance committee and maybe in conversation with other people. And I don't think it's appropriate to send out a general survey and say, mm-hmm. you know, what do you think of? But I would expect that in those meetings that if there were some deficiencies or there were some real issues or problems, mm-hmm. that those would come to the forefront in some of those discussions. And hopefully we have people in our community that call you from time to time and say, hey, why are you doing this? maybe more frequently than ought to happen. But I feel like that our superintendent and our treasurer have set up in their operational systems contact with the public so that they do get some feedback. And I know Diane is in the buildings, and I also know she may not have opportunities to sit down and talk personally with large numbers of teachers and that kind of stuff just because of the scheduling, all that kind of stuff. But I know I get a sense of what's going on in the building, you know, when you walk through. And
but I also realize that you could get a totally different sense depending on who you talk to, you know.
Absolutely.
So I think that's, you know, that's one of the things. I mean, yeah. That's just the reality. So I just kind of feel like as a community, you can get a general sense mm-hmm. when you're out there and, you know, or you meet somebody in the grocery store, like you said, yeah. Somebody didn't know you were a school board member and they were just telling yeah. you a lot of positive things. And to me, that's more valuable than some of the other pointed conversations when it's like a specific issue that's really pissed somebody off, really made somebody angry.
Mm. Are we still polling the students?
Am I what?
Do you still poll the students as to the teacher's performance?
Well, we poll them as their satisfaction.
Yeah.
Yeah, we still do hope survey.
No.
Okay, this, so that's if not, there's a hope survey for the teachers.
So that was our first attempt that there isn't one that exists. So the thing I shared with you is the very first time that we've asked about the social emotional wellness of our staff. So that's on a grant with Mark. It started at the high school. We've invested the grant there. And we've really seen some great things happen. And I said, well, Mark, let's spread it out over the staff and let's see what we get. And then let's work this spring to set some priorities for next year on mm-hmm. how we might address some of the things that they're going through, you know. And it's really led to some conversations like, you know, hey, have you ever thought about X, Y, and Z? Or we really liked when you send us all personal postcards.
Yeah.
Over COVID.
Yeah,
you know, so and I do those things now pretty much on a regular basis. I'm not in buildings quite as much, but those are some things we've done to kind of it's this. I can tell you, I certainly am not in education as long as the two of you, but I can tell you that this year was like nothing I've ever seen. So I think I put that in a board communication, like. Mm-hmm. We're all kind of scratching our heads, even adult behaviors, not necessarily staff members, but adult, you know, parents. And so it's kind of like we're having to regroup, and that's kind of that impetus for what I was talking about this spring, for us to kind of reshoot, you know, give an injection, a booster of what we do well. As you know, I go to every building once a month. You know, high school doesn't attend as well as the elementaries, but that's about accessibility and getting that feedback. Last spring, before we started strategic plan, I went to every single building and met with staff about, once again, okay, what are we doing a really good job of, and what do we need to do a better job of? And kind of went classroom to classroom in the buildings to get that feedback, and that really laid the foundation for some things that we were able to change pretty quickly. Like, elementary staff were like, we used to all come together for PD, and then they asked to all be separated because they want to focus on the building. Well, now they want to come back together. Great. This year we really focused on ways to bring them back together. They love that idea sharing. So we've made some of those changes, I think, over time. But people are tired.
Yeah.
We're all tired. It's been... there have been some behaviors. I can give you an example. We have kindergarten students that are a struggle, and we've had to call about some alternative placements. The places to take those kids are full. So it's not just here, right? It's I'm not going to attribute it to COVID because I don't know what it is. That would be my suspicion, but we have some work to do on just being nice to one another once again and having conversations that are respectful and that we can debate, but that doesn't make you a jerk and mean and end up in a fight and or social media threats. So one thing that's really come out in our strategic plan, I'm not sure what it's about, but has been parents putting on more nights for them, giving more education to them, partnering more with them, helping them. One of them was around, like, just social media education. And we've tried to do some things, and attendance has been horrible. So I think it's just going to be a time to pull parents together and say, okay, how do you want it then? You know, we've put on some nights like you're talking about, and no one shows up. So how can we, you're saying you want this. Mm-hmm. How do we get it to you? You know, right. Do we do some online learning things with you? Do you, so I think
food. They always say food to bring people in, right?
So we tried to do it like on parent-teacher conference night because parents would already be coming. And, if one parent comes and we help, then that's a win. But you kind of, staff gets discouraged too when they put on, all the bells and whistles and have a great presentation and no one comes or one person comes. So I think we have some things moving that way too that are going to bring some life back. Does that make sense? To some things I think we are really knocking out of the park that I just... We haven't been able to attend to them like we have traditionally. Right.
And one of the reasons why I kind of want to know what the pulse of the teachers are is because we know our finances are going to be limited, so we have to find the edge. Like, what's the edge to help retention, to help quality of life of our staff? Mm-hmm. Because everyone's going to say, oh, pay me more. But at the end of the day, you can pay someone more, and it still sucks. Right? and you will still leave. Mm-hmm. So it's not just about money. What are the small things that we can change or improve or just be consistent on
the social
to help staff, to help retain our staff, keep them happy? Because the happier our teachers are, we can't with parents. I mean, what's happening is just there's parents who are just anxiety is through the roof, and their kids are modeling behavior, and so I know that. Like, so we have to. That's we're just seeing what's happening at home and are happening in our schools, and so we have to be very like we can't always change that, like the parent side of things. We can give general education on tips and stuff like that, but unfortunately, kids show up and they're reacting to things that are happening in their home, and so that's the thing we can't change. But we can try to figure out how we can improve the quality of life, and we can influence that a little bit. I mean, I know. The social emotional, like my kindergartner is sometimes he'll come and say, hey dad, just take a deep breath. I'm like, I'm getting school from my little kid is telling me, all right, you know, just take it. I don't know if that's good part of me or not, but I know that he's learning that at school, so that is being a kind of, and so
I think that's fair. I mean, it's been a lot.
Okay. Well, that was pretty, that was good discussion. A lot kind of out in the whatever, out in the edges there. But I think we all agree about moving forward with the evaluations and have some more things to consider that way. So then the next thing on here was to review and discuss our board protocols. We revised them last August, obviously before you two were on the board.
Self-evaluations, what's that?
Self-evaluation. That's, I mean, that is, that's the evaluation of the board against our work plan.
Okay.
So we'll be, I mean, that'll probably, again, since you're new and you didn't help create this work plan, what we've done in the past is just have a meeting probably in July or August, which I've got some dates on there, where we kind of go through that work plan and say, okay, how did we feel like we've done here? Is there anything that needs to get added, deleted, revised, whatever? And then, like Diane said, with the new strategic plan coming out, that's going to be a great opportunity for us to sit down and talk about this next school year. So we'll combine the two.
So just from, I do want feedback. I mean, I want to be evaluating.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Like, you know, I do, I'm not going to say, hey, we have to have this feedback and then not welcome that. So I just want to stress that.
Right.
And our goals and our work plan is to try to attend special events as frequently as we can or whatever. We at one point we were trying to have everybody go to an athletic event, and that
the same one or
different ones. Yeah, there were too many.
That proved to be a challenge.
Yes.
Yeah. If you've ever looked at our calendar. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, okay, who's going to go to the cross country meet? Who's going to go to the tennis meet? Who's going to go to golf course and so forth? And that was a bit of a challenge and kind of went by the wayside. So we've tried some things and modified things. We set goals of attending work sessions and meetings with OSBA and speaking positively about the school district and that kind of stuff. So.
And I do think next year, it'll be all hands on deck once we get rallied up for the levy. I mean, we're already working on the backside with that committee, but that's going to be an all hands on deck opportunity to make our strategic plan come to life.
Get your comfy shoes ready for next
what's
year.
What's the date on that?
It's going to be
May.
I don't know, is it the second or third?
Second.
First Tuesday in May.
Yeah.
Tom, you can...
Oh, yeah. Feel free to leave my computer here.
Yeah, sorry, behind me.
Do you want us here for this part of it?
Oh, I don't. Let's see. Yeah, I think we're probably fine. I mean, well, why don't you just stay for the board protocols, okay? So that's the next one, is just looking over our operating protocol again. So that was what we had revised last August. And so this will probably be another work session for us. But just kind of a reminder, again, since we're all together, I just think that communication section is such an important one. And it's good to remind everybody all the time. You know, we have our community coffees, or you're out in the community and somebody complains about something, to make sure we're letting Todd or Diane know. And then again, that we don't initiate communications regarding the school district business or personnel complaints and criticisms directly to staff members. If somebody comes up to you, you can listen. Say, oh, thanks. I'll make sure that Diane knows, or I'll make sure Todd knows, whatever. And just following the chain of command. So again, like going back to those community coffees, somebody has concern, then you let them know who you're going to forward that to. I guess it's that reminder that we don't have to have answers for everything, number five on the back about that communication, that I'm the liaison between the board and the administration. So if you've got a question, feel free to email. It's nice if I get copied, just so I'm aware. And that way I know, are there certain areas that maybe we need different information, more clarity, whatever. It helps me to know that those conversations are happening.
I think one of the biggest things Bill Reimer said to his different board at the time, but he talked about, all of you are probably in this area because you want to solve problems.
Yes. Yes.
But the goal really of the board is not to solve the problems. Like, you're not supposed to find the solutions, right? Bring the problems to us as the operating people. That sounds weird. Mm-hmm. But and let us take on that role. Like, you're certainly, lots of you bring me problems every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. And let's see, then our school board meetings, you know, again, I think everybody has been very well prepared. That reminder about the questions, that it's really helpful if we can get the questions in advance, make sure people are prepared so that the meeting runs smoothly and somebody's not sitting there going, ooh, I don't know, you know. So I think that's just a good reminder to look over those things. And I thankfully, I mean, really, when we go to these other trainings, I can't tell you how wonderful it is to be on a board where if we do have a 4-1 vote or a 3-2 vote, we walk out of here and everybody's fine.
Sure.
You know, so thank you for that. We don't have to deal with that.
You'd be
we
shocked.
We are adults.
You would be shocked at how...
Yeah, maybe I'm not an adult yet, but we're all adults, right?
There are some boards out there that the animosity and... Actually, the level of hatred between board members and amount of disrespect is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Completely unacceptable. Really.
Yep. And maybe the other thing I just want to point out is just that reminder, too, that as individuals, we don't represent the board. We really aren't board members unless we're in a meeting like this. We don't represent the district. It's that, remember, use your ears, not your mouth. So much, but having said that, I guess I think it's important to review this, and then we will also review it to see, like, over the next several months, if there's things on here that you think could be cleaned up, need to be revised, something else added, then we'll do another revision later.
Yeah, I thought I saw something on there, maybe somewhere else, discouragement about being in the PTO type of organizations, and
I don't know if it was in here.
That's in board policy, I think.
Yes, like, you really shouldn't volunteer just because, as a board member, you may be working with an employee, and at some point, if something comes up, that, you know, you might have a relationship with them or see, I don't know.
So, like, for, like, that Dottie Daughter dance at Edgewood, it would have been a...
You can go to that.
They asked for volunteers. That's the gray area, but I could attend.
Yeah, we wouldn't necessarily, it's not a great idea to be a volunteer where you're like
a leadership role or something?
Right, take in charge of a group of kids for like a field trip, or maybe working with a teacher on mock trial.
Because they used to do mock trial, and then he stopped doing that.
I worked with mock trial for a short period of time after I was on the board, and it was like, I need to get out of here.
Okay.
Because you're putting yourself in the position where it creates an unfair situation for the teachers, because they don't know how you're going to respond, and, you know, how you're going to interact, and do they need to get your approval to make decisions and do that kind of thing.
Okay.
I got to ask, and I think all of us did, to come and serve at Northwoods
Passion Fair.
Passion Fair.
That stuff is fine. It's more
like going in to read with the kids.
I was there as a world traveler.
So I can
hand out pictures.
You're talking about the leaders. Like, I'm not
getting
up.
You shouldn't be the president of PTO. Yeah.
No, okay.
Anything like that. Right.
But you can be a member and attending member because, you know, they continually ask me to volunteer to judge different things.
Right. then that's fine.
Got to be honest with you. I plan to continue to do that.
Yeah.
Well, I help judge some things.
Yeah. It's just like if you're we wouldn't want you and another teacher to take 50 kids to Hawaii.
No,
for that,
I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
I go to Hawaii, but yeah. not with 50 kids. We're better with that.
Right. That would put you in a position of, you know,
school employee.
Right.
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 You see that because any complaints on that will come to this board, and you don't need to have firsthand knowledge. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to be in that position.
Right.
Yeah. That's the purpose.
No, that was my only.
Yeah.
So if you kid plays basketball and you're a part of the concession basketball stand. Work the concession stand, go to the meetings, but you shouldn't be the president of the Hoopsters. Yeah.
Right.
When it comes to the questions thing, I know I've probably made an error here. Sometimes, as things are being presented, I'm thinking of questions that either I assume or people in the public are going to ask or want to know. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to get better at getting everything beforehand. Mm-hmm. And maybe I should just get better at thinking my questions through before I hit send as well. So if there is a question, I'm doing my best to hear. Just sometimes curiosity, I ask, and maybe I should be more thoughtful before I do that. But it's not out of a gotcha or anything. I'm just trying to
get you. Yeah.
Sometimes we do get some information like that is being presented first. Like that's the first time we're seeing it. So
it may be the last. I think that's also if I have a financial question, I call you and you answer that question. But then I don't ask that question in the board meeting because I already got the answer to it and I'm satisfied with that answer. I think that does the board a disservice because that question needs to be asked and,
But that's, you're welcome to do that.
I have to remember to do that.
Right, right.
That's why I'm thinking maybe, maybe we should just say, hey, you're going to ask this question.
Be ready with an answer.
Don't answer it yet.
Yeah. that's exactly how I've approached Todd on a couple of occasions, and I think maybe with you said, when we get to the board meeting, I'm going to ask you this question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that gives them.
Then I at least know it's coming. Like sometimes he'll ask me something, I have to go back and look up, and I want to provide you that answer.
Right.
So you can do that too. Hey, I'm going to ask X, Y, and Z just to give you a heads up. And that's, then I can be prepared.
Now, the other side of that is I'll say, well, I'm going to ask you this question. Then when they do their presentation, they provide the information.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I try.
Well, by the way, I was going to ask this question.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
Well, isn't that my job, right?
Right.
I need to make sure I cover those bases.
So. But yeah,
because if you ask
them
a question, the meeting's like an hour longer, right? So you want to...
Yes, we are. Absolutely. We are. Let's see. When are we? We are about not quite an hour over right now. But okay, good. So I think that covers our board protocols, I think. And then are you guys, everybody okay if Diane and Todd want to go home at this point? You guys want to take a granola bar
with
you?
I just have one question before they leave.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to be talking about board policy book review.
Yeah.
And I know that you guys already have kind of a system that goes through. Are we thinking, or do you have any suggestion, should this be in collaboration or completely separate?
We want to, like, we know this
we're
kind
of...
We're
in the midst of a comprehensive review right now, is that what you mean?
We are?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. With OSBA?
Right, and just reading every single policy front to back.
Okay.
You must have said something to Jonathan, or I said something through Jonathan.
Well, I knew something came up when we went to one of the trainings and looking at evaluations, actually. Like, the current policies for our evaluation are not, don't align with what we're doing for our board self-evaluation. And so that, we thought, well, at the very least, we need to start in the board area to make sure, because we know what we're doing as a board. We may not know some of, or be as familiar with some of those other areas.
I think it's important that, as board members, we actually start going through all the policies so that we understand what's in there and what, what they say.
Mm-hmm.
So his review is about inaccuracies, getting rid of old language, OTES 2.0 and 95.2 and all those different things that are happening to make sure we're section by section.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, should we then be following?
I was going to say, do you want Jonathan to lead? Are you wanting special meetings? Would you?
No, I mean, I thought it'd be better to assign one or two board members to be, like, I remember back when Amy and I first were joined, and I think Jeff and Tracy worked with OSPA, and they did a complete revision of everything. So, okay.
Not everything, okay. Because we've just, look at how many we just, yeah. I mean, Dick,
right. and
it used to be Brian, sit on that
right.
committee.
Right, right.
I don't know who's
and
that.
I had a meeting with Jonathan for the policies that are currently under
like legislative,
review
yeah.
for mm-hmm. some changes. Mm-hmm. And when you get into the policy book, you have a policy, and then you have a regulation in terms of how it's implemented, and those mm-hmm. two things often are nearly, or are in fact actually exactly the same
yeah,
language.
Right.
The vast majority of our policies are state law, mm-hmm. and what's typical is OSBA will recommend language that is consistent with state law, and mm-hmm. their attorneys do all of that crafting. Mm-hmm. Jonathan then looks what area is that, and Ryan gets transportation and food mm-hmm. service and those kinds of things, and Jonathan gets the OTAS, more of the administrative mm-hmm. kinds of things. Tim Canale gets a lot of the classroom teacher kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then there's special ed and so forth. And they vet that to look and see what is our current policy? What is the recommended change? Why is the change being recommended? And if it's a, change in words that comes from state law, because lawmakers will say we're going to define student differently than what we've defined it in the past, or we're going to add this word, or we're going to call it something different. A lot of it is that the changes are those kinds of things. But each policy has all the legal references and notes that give you some of the background, some of the reasons why the language is the way it is. But
you're envisioning everyone work through it, so or
no,
two people?
No, okay. One or two people that okay. would kind of be the point person for it.
Yeah.
So, and I just didn't know if we had just kind of wanted to do that research. Is there a big cost attached to that? Is that just something that we're doing that we do in house? I mean, I know OSBA offers some of those services.
I don't think there's an additional cost for.
Okay. It's just the time.
Yeah. At least I we'd have to check to be certain. If you're talking about a total overhaul, I don't know.
So we heard that in the 101 course too. Like every
uh-huh.
5 years you should do a complete, analyze your
mm-hmm.
all the board policies every 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And some districts have gone 10 years. They'll mm-hmm. do onesies and twosies new, but not
mm-hmm.
the whole.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know, looked at every single policy that's been approved?
Yeah.
See if it's needed. If it needs to be revised or updated. That's the recommendation that we heard as well.
Yeah.
They did say, I think they it wasn't that there were some contractors that they
mm-hmm.
could take advantage of, but I think it was just more of just make sure that you're actually going through your policies, knowing what they are.
Yeah.
Once every 5 years to kind of do that.
What? There are 12 sections.
Yeah.
It's not a small feat.
No, it's not.
No, it's not.
But you could say, okay, we're going to focus on one
yeah.
every month.
Yeah, but I think there is a duplicate policy.
Oh,
right?
There's
so
lots
there's
of
one,
duplicate. Yes,
one
because
one
they
section.
Reference. Yes.
Well, it's in different sections.
Right.
You
because
different.
You have mm-hmm. the policy and then the regulations and so forth.
Well, I'm talking about the different sections, section C, section. So the policy, the same policy will show up twice.
Now, I just general comment. When I talk to Kenna,
mm-hmm.
who is
the
OSBA policy person, mm-hmm. she has always said, oh, your district is up to date. They're, they got everything the way it should be. You don't have any issues.
Okay.
That just might be from a legal standpoint.
Correct.
You know, and, that, and I think that's why, again, especially when we look at the board, school board governance and operations, I think that's one, that was my main focus.
Yeah.
That we just have a close look at that, so.
Yep.
So are you going to do that independent? You want me to figure out a way to facilitate it?
Well, I think maybe we should do it independently then. From listening to the whole conversation.
Okay.
Yeah. Just independently, because it's
it's
actually for board education more so than
legal. Like board operations kind of thing.
Okay.
Okay,
So I would say then if you have any questions or you want help facilitating, let me know, or honestly, let Jonathan know. He's always in the policy.
Okay.
And I know he's in the middle of doing some checks and balances now. Like, we've evolved. Do we have the right language? Is this our practice? What might we need to change?
Right.
There's some wording that's not quite as strong as it needs to, so he's finding those things.
Okay. Would it be appropriate to, like, do, like, a standalone work session with Jonathan on this? Or, since he's already doing the work, like, we do our homework before that, right? We all do our
sessions. And maybe bring questions.
And then just do, like, a work session on board policies. We don't have to decide it now, but maybe that's a... Since he's already working on it and we're talking about it, then maybe see how our two individual streams can then collide at a meeting.
Okay.
And then any things that we need to put on an actual meeting agenda, we can initiate from there if there is any... Does it make sense to me?
Well, and honestly, some of the questions you may have might be just taken care of in a phone call. Like, it might not be...
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm just saying, like, if you bring Jonathan here and, like, go through a question from here, here, and here, that would be tough because a lot, just because he oversees them all, there's different experts. So Kim would be good. So, I mean, I guess if you were to do that, you would want him to know everything ahead of time so that if there's a question about West Led, he needs to talk to Kim.
And again, I mean, if we're talking about the entire, like, all of them, that, I mean, that's a ton of policies. You know?
I guess
can we focus on the school board governance and operations first?
That would be a little bit like saying, let's sit down and spell check more and
ORC codes.
No, what I'm saying is, after he does his review, he'll bring that presentation, and then after we all have our discussions with him, right? And then as a board, because you said we're going to independently do our own sections.
No. So what Jonathan is doing, if he's making revisions, those will show up on our regular board agenda.
As a first read, second read?
Yeah.
Just throughout the year?
Yeah, yes. Throughout the year, there'll be between, I'm going to say, three or four, and sometimes there's up to 20.
Yeah. It's like they send out a quarterly policy.
Yeah, but some of his, he's just going through to say, okay, is this what we actually do? Is this the word we want? Because some things will say, like, may, and it should be... Won't. And so cleaning up any of those, you know, marking those and doing a kind of a thorough based on just some conversations with our legal team. Like, I'm not sure why you'd have that.
But we couldn't just do all that in one piece of legislation.
Well, we do two readings.
No, those are readings. But
readings,
so all the revisions...
There will be on our next regular meeting, there will be a first read on about 8 items.
And they're part of the
like an annual. You understand what I'm saying? Like here's the complete all the changes.
Do it like, but some of them are time sensitive, sometimes you need to approve them.
No,
based on legislation.
Yeah, sometimes something will change and you like
immediately.
Change.
Or if you find something that you know you're not doing, you might as well change it.
Because
what your policy says.
As typical, some of these are driven by state law, and the law goes into effect.
Yeah.
And we can't wait a year before we make our policies consistent
like
with the
finance requirement, right? The financial orders.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That kind of stuff.
Okay. Yeah. So right now, I think, Nan, are you going to, do you want to?
Yes.
Okay. So you're going to focus on B, the school board governance and operations.
We're going to start with B.
Okay.
And we're going to go through all of the B policies.
Okay.
Okay, as board members.
Okay.
And then as questions develop on each of those policies, then when we go through everything, then we'll find out who the subject matter expert is, and we can ask those questions. Because this is a review, but more for board education than for policy
questioning. Yeah.
Policy questioning.
Right. Education and confirming that this is what we're doing.
Right.
Yeah.
So, Nan, do you want, when I go through the section board, you know, the section B, mm-hmm. then refer any question I have to you, mm-hmm. and then you'll collect them?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
Do you have a deadline?
Homework.
I'm thinking this can be like a summertime project.
Okay, good.
Okay, so we'll...
Good.
Yeah, maybe make it
sitting out on the dock,
yeah.
reading policy.
Right.
I envision it now. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Right. Guys, I think, is that good mm-hmm. with Diana Todd?
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. So we jumped ahead to the board policy. We've done the board protocols. We've talked a little bit about the board work plan. I don't know. Do you want to talk any more about the board work plan right now? Not at all.
Okay. No. Okay. Maybe Todd's? I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's mine.
Right here? Oh, no.
It's easier just to pick it up. Take it easy. I'm sorry.
You're welcome. Okay. Okay, yeah, so going back to this work plan, I guess part of this, what we would include in here was when we talked about topics for future discussion. Now, I don't know if we can definitely share some of those right now, knowing that when we get our updated strategic plan, we're going to have a little bit more direction, I guess. But if there's anything that anybody wanted to share now, feel free to.
One for future discussion.
Uh-huh.
I was a former CASA volunteer. This is a minor topic, but I was a CASA volunteer and like court appointed special advocate. I know this is only a very small population, but there is an intersection to what they do in education. So I didn't know if like it would be appropriate to request if we could have like Tanya Matthias. She's the director of the CASA program. Mm-hmm. You know, give a presentation.
And just for anybody who's listening, and for anybody who may not know, including myself, what does CASA stand for again?
Court Appointed Special Advocate. So
okay.
Anytime a child is into the child welfare system, mm-hmm. there's then a CASA or a guardian vitam, there should be both, that are there to like see what's the best outcome for the child, staying with the current parents or mm-hmm. foster care or kinship.
Mm-hmm.
And so school, like, they're like CASA volunteers can request information about the student's performance and things like that. So there is definitely an intersection there.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's a minor topic, but it's something mm-hmm. that I know I've talked to her. I didn't mm-hmm. make any commitments, but I know she's willing to do that, and something mm-hmm. she would do.
Okay.
My second topic is, I don't want to dive too much into this, but we're growing.
Mm-hmm.
As a community, and growth's not going to stop.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we help influence that as a board
mm-hmm.
In working with the players at the table that we have in our mm-hmm. community? So that's something, I don't know how we, when or and how exactly that conversation looks like, but I think it's something we need to come up with a plan for. Because I don't think we can just say no to all growth. Like we have to be able to figure out how do we influence it without mm-hmm. just being objectionist?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And just to me, that's a question of communication, because we don't get a vote on growth.
Mm-hmm. Well, technically, right now I'm on Planning Commission, so I'm not saying the board gets a
yeah.
vote.
Right.
But we get influence. Right, not for me, but we mm-hmm. get influence.
Yeah, and as I said, this is mm-hmm. this is where education comes in.
Mm-hmm.
City Council's going to meet tonight,
right?
And our treasurer sent information to them, and at the beginning he said, you know, you vote however you think is right, but I have some information of the impact.
Accurate information.
You know, on how that is going to impact the school district. And I know that Diane and Todd and Ryan all have, you know, at various times meetings with city officials, with county officials, and so forth. And we've had the county ask our position, our input on the solar panels and the pilot, the payment in lieu of taxes on that. And so from my standpoint, I see we don't get the vote. We can communicate information. And I think, I agree with you, I think we need to do that, but I think we need to do it as a board and pass, you know, if necessary, pass a resolution.
A statement of whatever.
A statement of position or whatever, because one of the real questions is TIFs and which types of TIFs are beneficial to the school district and which types of TIFs are not beneficial to the school district. And one of the difficulties for me as a board member is understanding that there are things which I don't have a responsibility for, and there are other things for which I have a great deal of responsibility. And the area as a board member is the operation and financial stability of the school district, not, you know, commercial development, not residential development. That's not my job. That's not my role. Now, I certainly have opinions and I have positions, but I need to make sure that I'm, as a board member, I'm communicating and making people aware of how the decision makers are going to impact our school district. Because all the growth, all the development, all the apartments, everything is going to get paid for. And it's a matter of whose pocket at which time do those funds come out of. And And I keep coming back to this, and I'll give credit to Steve Devine, taught me that if there's a problem, it's my fault that I haven't educated others to, you know, with the information that they need to be able to understand what it is that I'm doing. Now, they may disagree with it and reject it, but as a board member, my role, whether it's a school levy, whether it's a building project, whether it's curriculum, whatever, it's my role to try and educate the public to the best that I can so that they at least have an understanding of what we're trying to do and why we're trying to do it.
One thing I think would be beneficial is to, you know, the city has a comprehensive plan. We have our projected enrollment study. A good document we could figure out how to create is like where for future buildings, building placement. So having that be a document that we can approve so that when developers are looking to develop, the city knows, well, the south end of Marysville, or so, you know, if we grow this, we hit, reach this threshold, we're going to need an elementary school building here.
Right.
And then, because instead of looking at individual applications and then saying, we have land, do you have land? We're more strategic with that. But the second, you know, when I'm on the Marysville CRA, and there's some abatements for homes. And I'll just share this because it's kind of, to me, it doesn't help us. But we objected to a abatement for a Habitat of Humanity home. But we have other Habitat for Humanity homes, and we have Richwood Bank, and we have those buildings that we do not object to.
But let's clarify, were they, like, I think this time there was a specific, like, let me know if you have any objections. And so, and going back to it, the reality is you can object, but it's not going to make any difference. Right. We don't have a vote, and I understand it's like a perception thing.
From a PR move, because when that was shared, people are like, really? Around the table, people are like, they did? And you know,
was there an explanation made? I guess that, like, and this, and I know I'm interrupting you, but I struggle a little bit because I feel like there's been that the perception is that our school district is just totally anti-growth, and it's not that we're totally in my opinion, it's not that we're totally anti-growth. It's we may be anti-residential TIFs, so anti the way that you're going to pay for them, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a humongous difference, and to just earmark somebody and or some group and say that they're just anti-growth, period, because they objected to a Habitat for Humanity without saying, well, let's go back and look at the whole history. You know, we don't have a say in it, so is it worth our while to say I object or not? And then when you reach point to say, well, okay, they asked me at this time, and they say, yes, I do object, and here's why I object, because TIFs on residential properties are a burden on the rest of our taxpayers, and they may not be aware of it, you know? So I just think that to educate, but I know it's, I mean, it is a big perception thing, and unfortunately, it's...
I think it's about how do we go about it.
Yeah.
And right now, there's a riff. I mean, I'll be completely honest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We have and it's not just happened in the last 2 years, or it's from my understanding, from the conversations I have, it's a riff. And at some point, I think the board has to, I'm not saying step in, or like, but we have to figure out how to solve it, because we're responsible. It's our district. It's our identity.
Can someone provide me the background? I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Cook's Point, there was the Cook's Point deal where we didn't approve that TIF.
Right.
And some people were angry. And I think what the problem is that... I feel like there's some personal anger instead of staying focused on the issue. I know that in every conversation I've had with our financial group, I mean, it's just been factual.
Yeah.
You know, and so going back to some of the OSBA training, when there's conflict resolution, number one, it's not you against me.
No.
It's us trying to solve a problem. And I feel like that's where a reminder needs to be made. It's not, I mean, I, you know, you said it's really not the board's problem to solve, but I do feel like we can help by having conversations with people that we have relationships with and try to remind them this is not, it's not personal, you know? I mean, we're looking at not just the school district. Mm-hmm. I look at it, I mean, the school district is a community. Any taxpayer in our school district is going to be negatively impacted, and 99% of them have no idea how school finance works and how TIFs are going to impact them.
Well, it's not just about TIFs. I mean, we could talk about the TIFs, and that's a realistic, but any development, I mean, what I'm trying to say is, like, the City Economic Development Union County team,
mm-hmm.
We all need to figure out how to, the growth is coming, so we have mm-hmm. to be at the table. And right now, I don't know, transparent sharing of information. Yeah. And even, like, you know, we did send that letter yesterday, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. really, I mean, it's three reading resolution. So mm-hmm. we should have, like, it's not our fault. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, they did meet on last Thursday, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not using one specific example, but yeah. I don't think a Habitat for Humanity home is when we use that, no. I mean,
important, I think, we didn't say no.
Right. We don't have the power to say that we don't like it.
It goes
it doesn't
back
make any
to,
difference.
As I read the letter, Todd mm-hmm. said, "You're gonna, you know, you vote and you make your decision. Here are the facts on how it mm-hmm. is likely to impact the schools, mm-hmm. and make your decision." And any time you make a decision that affects a community, there's going to be benefits and there's going to be detriments, you know, and trying to balance those. I think, as Sue mentioned, that some people have taken it personal. I think that there is an incorrect perception that we are opposed to growth. And, mm-hmm. and I don't think we really have a position one way or the other in terms of favoring or opposing, because it's going to occur, mm-hmm. and we don't get to vote on any of that. You know, the landowners, developers, city and county officials, they're the ones that make all the decisions about how the growth occurs. And we can, as a board, we can express an opinion. We can provide some information.
But isn't it true that they can provide a 75-25 TIF with no board approval whatsoever?
Correct.
They for only 10 need, years. 10 years.
Right.
For
up and to 10 they years. They only need board approval if they try to do a...
Like 100% 30 years.
Or right. 20 or 30 year.
So,
right. And then they need to get the board right. approval on that.
What I think maybe my ask is, because I think we can jump into these like conversations,
sure.
but growth is coming, so I think mm-hmm. maybe we should have a document showing if we grow mm-hmm. in these areas, here's mm-hmm. where schools will make most sense. Mm-hmm. That's our main concern, right?
Yeah.
Here's mm-hmm. where new schools will make most sense.
Well, last
and then here's some parameters of when you're
number of houses,
number of houses,
yeah.
like just putting that all in an official mm-hmm. document. That way, city planning or the county or Jerome Township or,
right.
or anyone else,
right.
they have a document that's been that mm-hmm. can help. Give developers, because that's what a comprehensive plan is, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Gives the developer an idea of what would be appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to use it, but at least we've said, we recognize growth is happening. Here's how we can best guide that growth from our perspective.
Right, right. Transportation,
yeah.
number
well,
of units,
last,
papers, things
last
like that.
August, we, at a board meeting, we had a report from Ryan, and he did a report to the board on all the property
mm-hmm.
that the school board has, and that included the east building,
mm-hmm.
which at that meeting he said it is not feasible to try to create an elementary school in that building. The renovation costs
right.
are too high.
Mm-hmm.
The yep. state would say you need to build a new building. And the other properties, vacant properties that we own, his opinion was if we needed to build a building, we currently own land at Bunsold, and that would be a suitable
location.
Site, a location for a building that's already property that we own, and there are utilities in that area. Now, does it make sense to put a building there? You know, would we need a building? Because there was some discussion, you know, there's a lot of growth down Watkins Road mm-hmm. out in that area. Growth continues to grow north, that kind of thing. I know, because I chaired the Planning Commission long years ago, that, you know, 33 creates a barrier for water and sewage. The fact that the water is now going to come from the north side of 33 helps to some degree. There's a sewer line that runs out to mm-hmm. Honda that may have some, you know, some potential, but those are could be pretty expensive kinds of things. So the development on 245, you know, from a school district standpoint, that might not.
Yep. I'm just like, okay. I'm just like, where are you going with this? So
just from the standpoint that. And I think that we could set some general statements, but mm-hmm. I think in terms of saying we would put a building in a specific location, because we don't know where the development's going to go, we don't know more than that. So I think we could make some general comments, mm-hmm. but I think the specificity would not be there.
But that's not true, because the documents that Hank showed us yesterday had very specific, already approved developments. Plus, he had a plan from the city strategic plan showing where the plan has already, the city's already planned to expand city limits out in this very large boundary outside of current city limits.
Mm-hmm.
So with using that information,
right,
we should be able to
we
make
could
a
help
plan
them. Yeah.
Where
well,
future...
I guess in my mind, not putting it, you know, on the corner here, but we
just
need some
general location.
Yeah,
yeah,
just general location.
Yeah,
there be
right.
Yeah.
If we go this right. way, we mm-hmm. need we need something mm-hmm. in this.
Right.
That way, it just it's like we've spoken to. We're not. It's not. It's a document saying, "Hey, we know we're recognizing growth's happening, and this
right.
is how we can best partner with mm-hmm. this growth
right.
in our interest." Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. we can even say, "We don't prefer residential TIFs. We don't prefer
yeah.
like
right.
and
yeah. put
and,
all that stuff
yeah,
in there."
Just
yeah.
be, that way, we have something that's
mm-hmm.
board approved
mm-hmm.
and that's more because right now I feel like the temperature is, oh, the school will just say no to anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that may not be true. I mean, we're probably are like we're not the funding formula doesn't help us say yes.
Right.
Well, but
yeah, we have there's several there's at least two TIFs that are currently in place.
Coleman's
Crossing. Coleman
Crossing.
But they're not residential.
No.
Right.
But you know,
yeah.
so we have said yes. We're you know we're agreeable to that.
Yeah.
And I know that the city has brought TIF discussions to us that were not, didn't go very far because they were not going to be beneficial to both the community and the school district.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that piece has to be there.
Mm-hmm.
That it, you know, the things that happen can't be one-sided.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be a shared benefit and a shared cost.
I think those conversations are happening, right? Like, because there's also the
mm-hmm.
economic development
right.
Incentives. But that's just something I think we mm-hmm. as a board probably should start looking at more and trying to get out ahead of it. Growth's happening unless there's a sudden downturn in the economy, which it's possible. But we should be prepared because especially if we know we're going to have to build a school in 2031, you know, then we need a see if we can tell developers where we want to build,
mm-hmm.
maybe we'll get some money a bit lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the other side of it is, as soon as you do that, price of property goes up. I'm
oh,
not
yeah.
kidding.
Oh, that's
I,
right. That's
I'm
right.
Not, I don't know.
That's
that.
Right.
Yeah,
if
yeah.
you say there's going to be a school here,
if we're willing
yes.
to go out right now and
yes.
buy chunks of land in,
yes.
in these areas. Mm-hmm.
No, we're
undercover.
Not going to buy it.
We want the
developers to.
Well, that would be wonderful, but
yeah, yeah.
you know they don't have to at
mm-hmm.
this point
mm-hmm.
in time.
No, but
and that's what I was saying. If you announce as a school district,
yeah,
you know,
right,
you know, I watched my dad buy a piece of farm ground for Ben Logan School District. Nobody knew had a clue,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's where the Ben Logan School was going to go until mm-hmm. after the ground was paid for,
mm-hmm.
because. You don't want to make that announcement ahead of time.
Right. Right.
If we can just talk about our strategy
yeah.
with how we're going to work with the growing community
mm-hmm.
and how, like maybe a presentation or a work session or something where we
mm-hmm.
can just discuss that as a governance
mm-hmm.
team.
Mm-hmm.
How do we handle these? Because it's a very high priority.
Yep, I agree.
Well, it's a PR thing. That's what I think.
Yes,
and
I agree.
I've got
yeah.
several PR things.
Okay. You got a couple? Yep.
Well, I think PR-wise, we need to have, and maybe we do have right now, but we didn't a couple years ago, and I question whether we do now, an exit interview for everyone that leaves this district.
Yes.
And
there is.
We need to follow up on what they say.
Or Jonathan needs to, right?
Not
we. But yeah,
the school
yes, and that
to,
is, yeah.
And
that does happen.
I had that data all pulled when I first became a board member.
Yeah.
The issue is, I believe, and I've been kind of outspoken on this issue,
yeah. Yeah.
is that there's kind of a checklist of reasons why you're leaving the district.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that personnel in the district feel that education in Central Ohio is kind of a small, interconnected community where everybody knows each other. And so the level of honesty on why someone's leaving the district isn't there. Mm-hmm. The data that is currently in the system, everyone has left the district because of family or higher pay or
closer to kids' schools.
I mean, it's almost those three.
And spouse's job.
There's no true explanation. Now I know many of those people, and I know that those were not the reasons that they left the district.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure. How do I want to say this? If I'm a disgruntled employee and I leave and I check the check mark, I'll spend more time with my family or whatever.
Right, right.
But if you take the time to sit down and talk to me about this, it's not going to go anywhere because it's not outside this room. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be more honest with you. Mm-hmm. And what happens is I leave feeling better about why I left or that these problems might get somewhat addressed.
Mm-hmm. Somebody heard me.
But I go away feeling more comfortable.
Is the current exit interview not a conversation?
Yes, it's a conversation.
But it needs to be very private, very, so that you can get that openness. So that person goes away and is speaking positively of the school instead of negatively, times 100, 100 votes. That's what's happening to us. And I think that would be very important.
Yeah.
I don't think we'd ever get past what you're saying, and you're right. These folks are not going to burn their bridge in an exit interview. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you don't want them to out in the community burning the next levee down the pike.
Mm-hmm. And I know
it's a sales job. Yeah. That's what it is.
I know that we've had past discussions about opportunity for growth. And so we did a reorganization of our administrators, Diane did, to try to put people in a position where they could grow. And as I look around, principals, superintendents in other school districts are former administrators here. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is that they earned some credentials, they got ready to take a next step in their career, and there's no openings.
Mm-hmm.
And so we lose some, I think.
The pyramid gets really real tight.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
If you're interested in being superintendent, there's only one.
Right.
And a principal, there's only, what?
One in each building.
There's a number of factors. One of the things that I have tried to look at is at the end of the year are the number of the overall number, not even the whys, but is the overall number of people that are leaving fairly consistent with prior years? Mm-hmm. Is there a spike? Is there something that's going on? That might indicate something more unusual.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you have exit interviews.
Exit interviews. And then the one that hit me, and this is a comment I got from a person in town, and then it kind of hit me. I stopped in here to get my picture taken and drop my check off for Todd, and this is a public institution. Probably the most public one in town, and the door's locked for security. Mm-hmm. And I understand that at our school buildings.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand that here.
Are you kidding?
Oh, after the last couple years?
Oh, no.
I'm glad to have. Okay, yes.
That door ought to be open, and there ought to be a secretary sitting there, that can, if we have to have an armed guard there, fine. But people ought to be able to come in here because if you have a person that's ticked off at the school district, when they get to that door, if they're being buzzed in, they're super ticked.
I'm thinking like in the city, though. I mean, while there, I had to get buzzed in at the city, too,
yeah,
like
the,
to pay
the
a bill.
The city doesn't allow you.
You can't just walk
to
in.
Just walk in and.
I don't go into the city, but
yeah.
What do you mean by the city?
The city office building. Oh. You walk in.
And yeah, the first door is open, but then to go into where the.
Well, that might
like
be
pay
true
bills
too,
and stuff.
Maybe we need to shuffle things around, especially if we build a new building. We people
well,
need
oh,
to
well,
be able
so
to
maybe
walk
something
in
to
and
consider
feel
to consider with
a
new building.
See a person.
Yeah.
You know, if that's a sacrificial adult, then it's a sacrificial
well,
adult.
So the city,
you know, but
the city. They did spend like $300,000 to make that glass that
yes.
that you see all the people. It's
yes.
bulletproof.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So like did upgrade it so you can walk in, but you can see in person. You can talk to them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But
yeah.
it is bulletproof.
Right.
And, you know.
And I know, I was pleased when they had security because we had security in all the school buildings.
Right.
Yeah.
And. We have as many angry parents show up here as we do at, well, maybe not quite as many, but we do, and the potential for a disgruntled employee and those kinds of things. And it, I don't know, it's something, and I understand because it, it...
I'm just
it
saying,
fr-
if you have a disgruntled, not employee, but a disgruntled... a parent,
mm-hmm.
you know.
I want
now
them to
more,
use. I want them to use the
dis-
buzzer.
Now they're more disgruntled.
Yeah.
And you may not let them in. I understand.
I know.
That.
Yeah.
But I, you know.
Yeah.
We
can
just
I was,
like put a note here, like
yeah.
consider
and,
the design.
And I
yeah.
think
yeah.
you know one
at
of the
East.
Things that we hope at the East building
mm-hmm.
is that we
and
would have
welcoming.
A welcome center, and so maybe we can.
Yes.
We can have something so they
but if
come
you're
into
get buzzed into the welcome center.
There's a
you
there's
wasted
a,
your money.
There's a vestibule area.
Yeah.
And
right.
That we have, you know, have
so
at least
come
some
inside.
You
mm-hmm.
know, we have some control
yeah.
of who's coming in and out and
mm-hmm.
and you know, some awareness of who, of who's in that building. Because
mm-hmm.
I know it goes back. There was a recommendation that administrative buildings be secured, and we didn't do it for a long time. So
mm-hmm.
I think we want security, but we want that sense of welcomeness.
Right.
So
yeah.
That's the
yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Yeah.
Welcoming security.
I mean,
right?
Well, that's why I say
that nice
you know if you got to put an armed guard out there, do it. But. Yeah.
We'll
okay.
Get
next,
next,
we have a
see.
Next, guys. We're running
yeah.
pretty late here. Let's yeah. not pretty late, but you know.
Understood.
I just want to be
right.
whatever.
Keep us
respectful
keep us
of all
top.
Of your time.
Right.
Okay. Did you have another one, Bill?
Not on VR. Those are the two. But
okay.
I have two other questions. I guess I'd like.
Okay.
To
sure.
Mm-hmm. One is why are we still allowing some students to take different courses at both the high school and the STEM school, but not everybody and not all courses? I think that
mm-hmm.
either that or we should lock it down more and make it, you know, you make a decision like it was in the beginning. And
mm-hmm.
But to, right now I think band and choir and language, I believe.
Right.
And auto mechanics can come over from the high school, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, what if they want to go the other way and
right.
take an art class or whatever.
Right.
Or an ag class, they can't do that, so.
And I do think that's been part of the strategic plan discussions. I felt like I heard that in some of those conversations before about students being able to...
Yeah, access to greater...
to both high, both,
yeah.
both
high school,
greater.
Both buildings. Yeah,
yeah. I mean,
yeah.
I,
so I know, I mean, as you know, whatever, that's... Some of their challenges now are the scheduling with the block classes and stuff, but that's... There are some surmountable
well,
challenges,
there's
you know.
There's block classes at both buildings,
yeah.
so...
Yeah. Right.
You know...
I know, but trust
that,
me. Even trying to schedule building visits for three groups
sorry.
Took a lot more time than what
than
you know.
Thought.
Okay,
yeah.
No,
yeah.
I knew how much time it would take because one change, all of a sudden, you're like, oh crud, that means oh, what if, you know. So, but yes, I do think that's. I know that's on the radar.
Okay.
So, but that's definitely a you know that's make Diane and you know make Diane aware of that.
And then the staff stress, which I think is at an all-time high.
Yep,
agreed.
Yep.
The one thing I keep hearing from teachers is, and I don't know anything about this, so let me say what I've heard, and then is this: the grade book system right now requires them to do a recency grade. So a kid takes a test and fails the test with a 60%, let's say. And they retake the test and they get a 50. So the 50 goes in, the 60 goes away, and nobody can see that the kid went downhill.
Okay.
And which maybe that's in the kid's benefit going down, going that direction, but it doesn't help it doesn't show progress going the other direction. And so what I would consider the really good teachers are keeping two grade books to show parents, one manually and one on the school's grade system. And what they're complaining about is that there seems to be no way, or no one's willing to address the way in which it would be possible to show all those grades on the grade system. Now, I've said almost more than I know about the situation.
Yeah. That seems like an IT question.
From what I hear, they've proposed it to IT, and IT has said we can't do that. So I don't know, and I think that has maybe a factor in a recent, you know, administrator leaving.
Okay.
Don't know for sure, but I think that.
And have you, and you've talked to Diane about this?
I have not yet.
Okay, that's where it needs to go.
Yeah.
You know,
so that she's aware
that you're hearing that.
Yeah, so you're saying like the reporting from like student growth maybe negatively impact it because we're not measuring that this, like, grade one.
I don't know that I would even go there. I mean, we don't really know, the detail. I mean,
I'm trying to figure out the link.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't even want to try and guess
backwards.
What it is, you know, without really knowing.
So, those are my big.
Okay.
But I think anything right now that could reduce staff stress is going to help, because you talked about the numbers exiting. I think we're right on the cutting edge of a big exodus, and it's not Marysville. I think there's going to be an educator exodus on mass scale.
I agree.
And we'll be hiring high school graduates to teach before it's over.
I completely agree, because the stress is, you know, what we're seeing and what we've identified as issues for students and staff in our district is being duplicated everywhere. Mm-hmm. So it's not just here.
No.
And I'd argue it's not just education either.
I really do think
it's everywhere.
And I think it's perpetual full moon.
Sure.
Yes.
Because the crazies are out.
Yeah.
And I didn't look at you as a crazy. Okay.
No.
I look out the window and I thought, I hope Jeremy can take that for the right way.
Okay. Do we have some more?
I got one. Just a comment.
Okay.
We need to, as board members, continue to reach out to groups and organizations to offer to answer questions or to put on a presentation. We do the coffees, but we need to, I think we need to be aggressive in going at Pleasant.
Nursing facilities was
very focused on trying to get to senior citizens, going to senior citizen centers and making ourselves available to do those kinds of things. I've had an opportunity to do that a few times, and it's frustrating because the security doesn't.
Oh, because you can't get in.
Yeah, and the other thing is they don't want to create the captive audience, where if you go at lunchtime to mm-hmm. the retirement home, mm-hmm. they don't want you to make a presentation to everybody in the room. Mm-hmm. Because they can't get up and leave, you know, right. they're stuck there.
You want to make it kind of optional.
So, yeah. And
can you set up a coffee there?
Yep.
Yeah. Did that. In some places, they will let you do that. Mm-hmm. Again, the response is not overwhelming in terms of people who want to talk to you, because a lot of them just get up and walk away, and it's not their routine. After they eat, they go take a nap, or they go do bingo, or they, you know, whatever.
You can leave information, and we did that.
Right.
Like some flyers or things like that.
You know, we need to try to come up with some things along that way. And I was going to... I'll talk to you afterwards about a possibility where maybe you and I can offer ourselves to talk.
Yeah, as long as they let us out, Dick. That's the only thing I'm worried about.
No, this one's not a nursing home.
We're getting slap happy here, guys.
One last thing. Gifted program. We talked, that came up in some conversations, I think, last year, just the gifted program, how can we strengthen
a little
it?
Bit more information.
I think there's been some concerns in the community about
that. That's my last name.
Okay.
Gifted? Oh.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The lack of, or?
Man?
I think so.
Yeah.
Did you have fun?
I think so, too.
I was just taking notes on here. I guess the one thing is that I'm very interested in, and I don't think it's necessarily one answer, but what's causing the stress among the staff. Mm-hmm. And some of it is anxiety that I think that they feel that isn't necessarily justified.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a sense of that they're going to lose their jobs, and that's 100% a real fear. I don't know, what strategy do we have as a district to help alleviate that? And one of the key factors, I think, is minimizing the amount of change, because every time we change things up, okay, that sets everyone back to ground zero again. And a lot of times it creates a ton of paperwork to follow how this, you know, whatever new idea is being done. So I think we need to be a little bit careful as we move into this new strategic plan not to change things up too much. Like, it's when it turns into a flavor of the month, a lot of times it's just a lot of work that doesn't really mm-hmm. come to any fruition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I think that might be kind of one of the big factors that we want to keep in mind as we're mm-hmm. doing this strategic planning and setting direction. And then also, how are we going to, you know, close this gap slowly, not putting the pressure on the staff, okay?
Right.
You know, we kind of know how to do it with interventions. That has worked for us very, very well. We made huge, huge strides before this. So we have proof that that's going to work. But, again, we need to be able to make sure that teachers and intervention teachers are both freed up. Okay, we've had a huge problem because we're short substitute teachers this year, and so intervention teachers can't pull their groups because they're covering mm-hmm. classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And they can do some intervention in a classroom, but definitely not to the level that they could have on a 1-4, 1-5 ratio, which it typically is.
I think everybody hopes that the kids are going to be more settled, that the vast majority of students will now have had a full year in a classroom, mm-hmm. and that the general behaviors and so forth will be better at the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. Kids will come in with more solid expectations of the way things are going to go. And hopefully we can get enough substitutes that we're not having to pull in the intervention specialists to mm-hmm. take over classes. And, mm-hmm. and we can, to me, that's how we get back to normal. It's not that we are doing something different. It's the environment in which we're doing that is more stable and more fully complete.
Well, one thing along those mm-hmm. lines, I guess, is it's at least at the high school level, and I don't know about the elementaries, the guidance people have become the testing people mm-hmm. to the point where they have no time to do the guidance that needs to be done mm-hmm. at the high school. And so you've got Johnny in a classroom who's tearing the classroom and the teacher apart because of something that happened at home that needs to be dealt with, mm-hmm. not tomorrow, not next week, mm-hmm. but right now. Mm-hmm. And you have no guidance counselors available because they're so busy either planning for, mm-hmm. conducting, or reconducting a testing scenario. And mm-hmm. Either guidance is important mm-hmm. or it's not. Yeah. I kind of think it's very important, mm-hmm. especially when you're planning careers. And mm-hmm. I don't think that my kids ever had a day that made a difference in their life from the guidance department. And I'm not blaming the guidance department
at all.
I'm just saying, my kids were lucky, I think.
Well, I know when I was teaching, it was pretty much the same way.
Yeah.
That's an area. I mean, we always talk about needing more staff here, more staff here, and so forth. To me, that's a staffing issue. Having enough
people. I think it's a testing issue. Get rid of some of the testing.
Yeah. And so if we hire someone and say your job is to do, to manage and organize and to run all the staffing, and is that somebody at a secretarial level? Is mm-hmm. that somebody at a higher level of pay? I'm not sure what the responsibilities are because I never got involved in administering all of those tests.
Me neither, other than when I was told to.
We've, as a district, we've actually done a real good job, not necessarily with guidance, but partnering with social services within the city and county. Mm-hmm. And we have, very active partnerships with Mary Haven, where they're coming in and doing counseling mm-hmm. with children right during the school day.
Mm-hmm. But it does. Sometimes it answers that emergency, mm-hmm. but more often than not, they're not there during that emergency, and they don't maybe need that level if you could handle it, In many cases, if the classroom teacher could just walk out in the hallway and talk to that kid, but then you threw away the education for 20 kids so you can save this kid, and that's always a balancing.
Right. Mm-hmm. There's some good stories about conversations ahead.
Okay.
Kids.
Oh, yeah, me too.
All right, so that is, I've got that as another concerned area or conversation area. Nan, did you have anything else, Nan?
Is this concern areas? Is this the
more like discussion? I guess
because one of the things that mm-hmm. I think that I would like to see the CI budget plan reported on a regular basis.
Okay. What do you consider a regular basis?
I'd say quarterly. You know, what is on the, what's on the PI budget, what projects are allocated, what does the workload look like, what's been done, what is, are we matching budget on that?
I know right now the PI fund, it's topics, like, so you have roofing, but I really would like it to see it at a building level.
And they have that, yep.
Yeah.
We've got very detailed.
Yeah. Now, when it was originally set up,
20-year forecast.
It was set up to say, you know, the roof on Edgewood may need to be replaced 10 years out. Mm-hmm. And so they put a number in 10 years out. Mm-hmm. And
that flooring in there,
right.
Furniture,
and so and the idea was that 10 years, the roof might still be in pretty good shape. And so you don't re-roof the building at that point. Maybe you move it out another couple of years. And that, well, it was, what was it that they were doing? They didn't need asphalt this past summer. Mm-hmm. So they were able to take asphalt money and do something else with it. Mm-hmm.
But there's a 20-year forecast in there.
So when we come to the fiscal year, I've never seen a 20-year forecast, but I have seen fiscal years. Mm-hmm. And here's the forecasted budget, recommended budgets. It just says asphalt, concrete, forecasted budget, recommended budget, roofing. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see this, since this should be happening all in this year.
There's a maintenance schedule, which is a separate document from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That lists the projects by building.
Sounds like another another meeting with Todd.
And so we approved this, right? January or a July meeting? Do we approve?
We approve a general expenditure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then
we really just approve. I mean, like, we approved our operating.
Yeah.
The 5-year forecast, we approved that in May and November.
Right.
And then for PI fund, that's more like appropriations.
Right, the appropriations.
Yeah, it's really
not. So the money comes in
budget,
and it gets assigned to general areas. Mm-hmm. And in most cases, the numbers are just holding space. And then during this time of year, they look at the condition of the buildings. What do we do? What do we need to do this summer? And they evaluate the asphalt. They evaluate the roofs. They evaluate the heating and air conditioning and so forth, and decide, well, these are the things we need to do. We need to buy a couple of buses. We need to do painting, more painting in some
curriculum
areas. We've got books that we need to buy, or technology we need to buy, whatever. And so then they go and they look to see, do we have enough money in that area to meet the expenses? And if not, what areas are we not going to be using funds that we can utilize in this area, so that we're doing the things that need to be done, and we have the money to be able to do it, but the numbers in the document are not hard and fast numbers.
And we do not approve. We don't approve a PI budget. We approve by project. We approve, like, you know, if we have to buy the buses or something, that will be on an agenda saying approval of buses. Mm-hmm. And I always say, is this in the budget? Yep, it's in the budget. And if you go look at the budget, you'll see they had some buses in there budgeted. But again, you're saying, it's very flexible, because just like your own household, you're going to budget things, but as things change, you adjust. And so that's the PI. Yeah, the PI one, legislatively, you don't have to approve the PI budget.
Yeah.
You have to approve the 5-year forecast for operations.
Right. The way I assume things to be is that we have a fiscal year, and here's the projects that we're going to do this fiscal year, and here's the appropriations for those.
And that's what they
when we approve the next operating, the operating budget, here's the projects we're going to do. I'm learning. So I would.
Because again, you have, when you have all these buildings, you have to be flexible, because you can plan to do certain things, and then all of a sudden
I'm not saying that there shouldn't be a flexible fund, or we shouldn't have, like, but like main projects.
What you want to see is the maintenance schedule.
Okay.
That's broken down by building, by
mechanical. Yeah, maybe I
should.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Where do you get that?
You're going to request it?
Yes.
Probably Ryan and Todd.
It did not exist until a few years ago.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, they, like, yeah, when we started, they were, when Todd first came, we didn't have a
PI forecast. We didn't have a PI budget. We didn't have a forecast.
Yeah. And then he worked with the company, and they did the 20-year one. It's, and now it's just kind of a rolling kind of a thing, so.
But we don't approve.
Right.
We don't approve every, there's a threshold of money. There's a certain threshold that once it hits, we have to approve.
Okay.
But under that threshold, that's just part of the daily maintenance.
Do you know what that is?
Yeah.
I think it's pretty.
I would think the pressure. We'll
see that in July.
I don't know, because if they can, like.
Oh,
will we see that when is there a budget season?
We'll ask for sure.
Okay. Jermaine, this is a document. This is online. Go to the district website, Treasurer, and this is the 20-year permanent improvement cost assessment.
Okay.
That's there. Now, there is also the FY22 permanent improvement forecast that's there. And so here's all the numbers for all the different general areas of expenditures. And because then Todd has to say, well, you want this. Well, that goes into this line.
I haven't got that far yet into our plan.
But right. But
it's just like never ending.
Still not. You know, the numbers are there, and
I think that at a previous board meeting, I may have just asked Todd the wrong question in my own personal email too, because that was what I was looking for.
Okay.
Is that,
good.
Yeah.
Well, that was like, as we're talking about different areas for discussion. I mean, I think with our project and with the levy, that finances is definitely one that I want to make sure we're having a lot of transparent conversations, and that we all feel comfortable. And if we don't say anything, because it's really hard to, if you make a comment and it's not right, it's hard to undo that, you know. So,
Say we're going to spend $1.7 million more than what we take in this year.
Okay.
So.
My other area was ESL and training support for our non-English speaking students. You know, that just kind of I think that's another area of stress for our staff. And I think that's going to be something that we see more and more of. So just wanting to make sure that we're providing the training.
Providing the training for who now?
Like staff members, so that, you know, like we have one person in the district to handle this, but, you know, individual teachers. They may have to deal with, you know, they may not feel like they have the tools to work with some of those students, and so.
Well, do they?
I'm sure they don't.
No.
I'm sure many of them don't.
At the high school, there's a student that's non-English speaking, and they had to get another student to come in and sit with them in class and help translate.
And if you recall, I know, like, in Diane's update, she was
fine,
saying that...
Let's say, is that kid there for the test?
Well, I don't know. But that's something that
I think so, but that's a pure guess on my part. I don't know. If they're coming the same class period every day to be with that student,
then that would make sense.
Yeah, that they would be there when there was a test or a quiz or those kinds of things. And I have no idea whether the teacher has the ability to get tests translated into the student's language.
Well,
That's something that. Like that's one of the focuses in Diane's, her most recent update. She was just talking about Summer Institute for Teachers, and one of the focus areas is going to be that ESL learners, and they've been working with Worthington too, and hoping to put on some workshops. So, you know, I mean, I think it's one of those things where for a long time we didn't really have that many.
No,
you know, to deal with, but it's but the changes happen quickly, mm-hmm. and so and I know you've talked too, Dan, about how can we partner with the businesses that are bringing these employees in, mm-hmm. and what kind of services are they offering the adults when they come
the
in?
Businesses and bringing these families in,
like Venezuela,
should be paying for a translator for the school district, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, right.
I agree with you, by the way.
But maybe some way to partner with them. Yeah. So that, but that's just one of my areas
is,
of concern.
Is the teacher happen to produce materials in two or three different languages, and I don't know about you, but I had a hard enough time getting one out in English on time.
Yes,
and then revised for the second take,
right,
mm-hmm. and the third take,
right.
Let alone
in
Spanish or
Google Translate
whatever.
Has helped a lot.
The what?
Google Translate.
Oh yeah.
Has helped a lot. Yeah. I just had someone in where I was volunteering, and they didn't speak any English, but mm-hmm. they spoke into their phone,
yes.
and then they showed me what the information that they needed.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And then, so then I was able to speak into his phone,
mm-hmm.
and then it translated it back to him, so he knew what I was...
I've done that before.
Yeah.
Really?
It's pretty cool.
When I lived in Japan, I did it.
You
so
just...
Sometimes
you
it
you down,
I know.
Download it
for Japanese.
Download it.
Oh, okay.
And you take pretty much any language you want. And you just say a word and it'll put it into...
Translate it for you.
Hungarian or German or Japanese.
I could have helped with the roofers on my house.
Sure.
I thought they were getting ready to throw me off. And I didn't know what they were saying.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. How about, you want to do just a quick, I just had sent you some end of year events, dates. I just wanted to clarify, like, these are not things that we are all supposed to be going to, but just some dates out there for you to be aware of. So, like, the agenda meetings, Nan and I go to those, but I just wanted you to have those dates in case there's something that you're like, hey, I've heard this, or can we talk about that, or, you know, whatever, to let us know. April 16th, this Saturday, is the TEDx event at the high school. You have to buy a ticket. It's $20 from 1 to 5, but it's our high school students and some business partners, too.
Mm.
It's just unfortunate. It's Easter weekend, so that might be tough for some people with family in town, you know. But anyways, then we've got our building visits over those different days, our different groups. We have the second round of bus driver negotiations on April 18th, the commissioner's special meeting on solar farms on the 19th. I mean, I may send an email to them just with a question, but, you know, if anybody's interested in going, that's great. We'll be having our Good Apple Awards at our regular board meeting this month.
Oh, that's this
month. Uh-huh. The Chamber of Commerce annual celebration, April 28th, which that is the district will pay for us to attend that. And we have our internship presentations that Tammy Cooper just sent out notification about that. There'll be a save the date, an official save the date, but they're May 3rd, 4th, and 5th. Then Board Leadership Institute, which I'm hoping everybody can attend at least one of those days. Friday is usually
the
best.
What's the date on that?
May 6th and 7th. I know, yeah, that's a tough time for you, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
National Japanese Honor Society induction is 10 a.m. on the 7th. Let's see, graduation May 21st. That's hopefully, can you, oh, what?
So we hand out diplomas?
Well, we are at the tables handing the diplomas to the people who hand them out. Yes.
We facilitate.
You'll be, Bill's going to hand out at least one or two.
We're going to be like a road.
Oh, really?
I don't know how that email.
Oh,
and
didn't
today
you
was the day deadline, so I sent it in.
Oh, okay. Cool.
I wouldn't not hand them out if
I know.
Requested, but
I know.
My wife was
I don't
like,
know why
I didn't
Robin Hood.
Hood. My wife was like, "What's the hood for?"
Oh, the hood.
yeah. But yeah. So that's a big one to try and make it to. And then really down at the bottom, I think May 2nd is that week. May 2nd is Staff Appreciation Week. It's usually the first week in May, mm-hmm. I believe. You know, we had that sign from back when they did the first COVID booster shots, mm-hmm. and we had a sign made, an appreciation sign. You guys probably don't know this because that was before you were on. But when they did it out at the fairgrounds, Pam Connolly coordinated people, just a bunch of people having signs put up saying thank you, teachers, you know, everybody. Mm-hmm. So we have this sign, and I was thinking maybe we could kind of rotate it around to the buildings that mm-hmm. week mm-hmm. somehow. Yeah. And try and, you know, we've got, whatever, 10, 11 different buildings, so we're going to have to maybe put one in morning someplace, in the afternoon someplace else. Yeah. And my other thought was, I mean,
early college lawn gets...
Oh, yeah, they get a lot of traffic.
Gets probably...
Well, that could maybe do both the high school and the early college.
Yeah, you get both of those.
Yeah.
Because...
But maybe we can, I don't know, get a group of us and maybe get my hubby to help out or something, you know? And we can move that around. But then... in the past, generally, it's just been me sending out an email. One time I asked for comments from the board, but I thought it would be kind of nice if everybody wanted to send me a couple lines, a little paragraph for staff appreciation, just sometime between now and the beginning of May, and then I can send that out to staff.
What date is that?
Usually I send it out, usually mine goes out on Tuesday, but I'll confirm that with Diane because they get a treat from the board too. So try and time that up together.
Fruit plates or something like that in the teachers' lounges and so forth.
Yep. And then the other thing would just be for our end of year evaluations and goals, you know, might need another at least one work session. So I just put a few dates out there. Those are dates that would potentially work for me, because I know I'm going to be out of town the beginning of July, and I may be out of town either the last week of July or the first week of August. So kind of depending on what other people's availability is, I can whatever. And I know, and I put in Dick's going to, you're going to miss the August meeting. He's going to be out of town.
Right.
Then. So if anybody else is planning to miss the August meeting, or, you know, if they know they're going to be missing the August meeting, let me know in case we need to change that date. So
I might be missing the July meeting.
Okay.
We're working out some plans. So.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I know. It gets hard, doesn't it? I mean, like, reason, like uh-huh. wait a second. I need a vacation.
We were trying to plan a trip for the first part of September
to
go to Nova Scotia. And the travel agent, we said, you can't go then because there's nothing available. Mm. There's no rooms. There's no transportation. It's all booked.
Yeah.
And so they hunted around and found a time in August that we could go, that they could line everything up. Mm. And so that's why I'm missing the meeting.
Okay.
Sounds like a good trip.
I hope so.
Is it like an educational trip? For you
always.
As a board
member. It's always educational.
Always. I keep my receipts.
Yeah. Any other questions? Comments?
No. Thank you for entertaining my questions. And
well,
comments.
Hey, you know, I mean, really, it's like, you know, I mean, I was like, I'm sitting there thinking, I feel like we're still in the honeymoon phase here, you know, like still trying to figure out how much information, like what your expectations are, and just learning about board oversight, governance, that kind of stuff. So, anyways.
Do we send anything for staff appreciation to the superintendent and treasurer? Do we do any, like a handwritten card or anything? Or is it more for the educators?
It's more for.
Okay.
Yeah.
When do we ever send them like an appreciation?
Not really. Other than when we do our review and when we renew their contract. Like when we do their evaluation, we usually publicly make some nice comments too. But I know those handwritten cards, those are nice. And I feel bad. I didn't send anything to Diane with her recent thing, but I talked to her, so. Anyways, okay. So let's see. Mr. Secretary, in lieu of our treasurer, do I have a motion for, do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Keck.
Second.
Second by Mr. Ferguson.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Keck.
Yes.
Mr. Ferguson.
Yes.
Ms. Savage.
Yes.
Mr. Smith. Yes. Ms. Devine.
Yes. Motion carries.